but that's how they struck me. If you are constrained by the regulations and requirements of society, what do you think might free you to discover the real you? If you're a woman, the argument is divorce, whereas if you're a man, taking up painting, singing or dancing is the answer to your problems. We may have a look at those. We may try and knit those two stories together. But we begin, perhaps, with the words of Harold Wilson. The Labour Party is a moral crusade or it is nothing. I say, how very woke. Shabana Mahmood, we know a little bit more now about her plans. I wonder if it's changed your thoughts.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Home Secretary has insisted she won't have to U-turn on her asylum reforms despite growing unrest from Labour backbenchers.
I don't believe that will be the case because I think what we saw in the House was broad support from my colleagues across the Parliamentary Labour Party for these reforms, for the necessity of these reforms, for the substance of these reforms and for the absolute critical need to deliver for the British people.
Shabana Mahmood's told LBC she's not prepared to let issues with the UK's asylum system continue to fuel division. The sweeping changes include fast-tracking deportations and limits on appeals. Some Labour MPs have condemned the plans as cruel and dystopian. You can watch and read more of Shabana Mahmood's interview on lbc.co.uk. Sir Keir Starmer has warned rows over the Labour leadership are wasting time and detracting from the party's priorities. The Prime Minister says he will lead the party into the next general election despite speculation of a plot to replace him. Sir Keir says he's utterly focused on tackling the cost of living for families. Housing developments within 15-minute walks of a train station in England are going to receive a default yes under new planning rules. It's part of efforts to help meet Labour's promise of building 1.5 million new homes by the next election. Another proposal includes allowing ministers to intervene if local authorities intend to reject applications. Donald Trump has reiterated he'd sign a bill compelling the US government to release more files relating to Jeffrey Epstein. The US House of Representatives is due to consider the matter later. Democrats and some Republicans are expected to vote in favour of making the documents public. President Trump spoke to reporters about the issue in the Oval Office.
They can do whatever they want. We'll give them everything. Sure I would. Let the Senate look at it. Let anybody look at it. But don't talk about it too much because, honestly, I don't want to take it away from us. It's really a Democrat problem. The Democrats were Epstein's friends.
And the government's reportedly planning to ban the reselling of live event tickets for profit. Ministers are said to be drawing up proposals to outlaw sales above face value and a crackdown on touts. Labour's manifesto included a promise that would lead to an end of the practice. Reg Walker is a ticket fraud expert and says the issue spiralled out of control.
We've seen £70 tickets up for sale at 5, 6, 7 or sometimes 10 times face value depending on the act or the artist. I think it's fair to say we've lost the ability to sell tickets to genuine fans at face value. That's how bad it is.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 93 at 95.82. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, a cold but dry day for many. Some outbreaks of rain for northwestern and southeastern areas with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean?
Well, you know what?
A chip and a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies. In a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning to you. It's a funny one, isn't it? It's not every day that we return to similar territory that we explored yesterday. But I think that when we are examining plans and then we 24 hours later in the position to examine actual statements and announcements. We are beholden to do so. I'd also like to say a quick word about this notion of surrender, if you don't mind. I think it's the right word. You may not like it, and you know me. I'm always open to persuasion that I should have a bit of a rethink. But I think the gig is up. Whether it should be or not is moot. But the idea that the conversation about small boat crossings and asylum seekers should not be dominating British political discourse because, well, off the top of my head, the cost of living, energy bills, water companies treating us like complete mugs, the NHS, the state of waiting lists, GPs, potholes, state of our roads. I could go on. All of the things that are measurably and obviously more important and should be exercising you and me a lot more than this issue. It hasn't worked. Oh, you know what I've just done, don't you? I've just thought of, well, maybe that's the topic. Why hasn't it worked? Why does this rhetoric work so well for people who don't want you to be focusing upon the economic situation or the NHS situation or the, you name it situation. Why does it work so well? Why do people who are never going to be affected in any way, shape or form by the arrival of somebody from Afghanistan in a small boat, why do they think it is the single most important thing in the country at the moment? We will do that, not immediately, because I do want to get stuck into Shabana Mahmood's stuff, but just in case, who was it the other day who accused me of having a scripted introduction? That was a brilliant piece of writing. Me and Keith put that together before the show. What I'll do, Keith, is I'll start talking about Shabana Mahmood, and then it will suddenly strike me that as we all sort of mourn the surrender, the rhetorical surrender, or the conversational surrender to the idea that something that is not that important is the most important thing facing the country. And then I'll pretend it's just occurred to me that we could ask how that works and why we are a population that has allowed or been encouraged or ended up making that distinction, surrendering that high ground. Summed up best in that polling, I think I've mentioned it every morning for the last 3 or 4 days. You know, ask the people of this country what the most important issue facing the country is. They say immigration comes second. You ask them what the most important issue facing them is. Immigration comes seventh. So yeah, we will. Will you remind me that we should get stuck into that question of why it works so well? Why people like me, the woke mob, the wokerati, the liberal elite, why it is so pointless to keep pointing at facts. I found the one I was looking for yesterday, and because you may not have believed me at the time. Compared with UK, with other European countries, okay, the UK received the fifth largest number of asylum seekers in the year ending March 2025. The fifth. So you could be forgiven for responding, well, say that's far too high. But of course, if you've got a brain, what you'll do is wonder how many people there are in this country and what the ratio is or what the per capita comparison may be when it's measured per head of population. What do you want to have a little guess at where we come on that list? If you're looking at asylum applications for the year ending March 2025, and you compare with other European countries, so only European countries, if we come fifth in terms of totals, but you break it down into per head of population, so it's the asylum application per head of population, where do you think we come? Where do you think we come? I don't think anyone will guess this correctly. I honestly don't. And it's part of the reason why this narrative of surrender is so compelling to me at the moment. It is extraordinary where we come on the list of per head of population application, asylum applications, because anywhere you go in the country, whether it is people that have fallen for the snake oil, fallen for the propaganda, or whether it is people who are dismayed by the success of the propaganda, everybody accepts that it's the biggest story in town. There's no pleasure for the umpteenth time in having told you that this was going to happen, having told you that if the newspapers insisted on inflating these balloons of bilious bigotry launched by Nigel Farage and his mates, then they will work. They do persuade populations. The cue for the ghost train, this is probably the oldest catchphrase on this programme, and the programme is now over 20 years old. The oldest catchphrase on this programme. It's a lot easier to sell tickets for the ghost train than it is for your speak your weight machine. when you're in really tricky territory politically, I think, is when you get elected to sell tickets for the Speak Your Weight machine and you end up selling tickets for the ghost train, which is arguably where Shabana Mahmood finds herself at the moment. So the number, I'm not going to tease you with it, we are 17th. We are 17th on the list. We're not even in the top 10 countries where, if you compare asylum applications to the number of people in the country, it is negligible. So, Idiot's Corner open. We are densely populated. Someone will say, yeah, you reckon? You reckon that's a clincher, 30,000 people coming over in a year, 17th per capita in the world, and you think the density of our population is remotely relevant to that? And that's the idea, isn't it? That you've got to find something to cling on to, because suddenly you're presented with evidence that you've been conned. My Lord, I lie awake at night worrying about this issue, and I clearly shouldn't be worrying about it, but I'm not going to admit that, because that makes me look stupid, so I'm going to attack the person who's holding up the mirror, and I am going to double down on the idea that it's right to worry about it. GP's appointments or something. Nothing to do with austerity, nothing to do with cuts to the NHS, nothing to do with anything other than the fact that there are 30,000 souls crossing the English Channel in small boats every year at the moment. That is the big story. And it doesn't matter what you think anymore about the facts. It doesn't matter that the 3-star, 4-star, 5-star hotels we hear about every day are not 3-star, 4-star, 5-star hotels. It doesn't matter that we're 17th compared to other European countries, while people are still shouting soft touch in your ear, or in Shabana Mahmood's case, asylum shopping. And who goes shopping and ends up 17th? With their 17th most desired option, or their 17th most popular option. Very few people, I would argue. It doesn't matter that none of this stuff is true. It doesn't matter. Julian says, is that per capita the world, or is it Europe? The details matter. That's why I said it 6 times, Julian. It's Europe. It is a comparison with other European countries. When measured per head of population, we come 17th. 5th in total, behind Germany, Spain, France and Italy. And again, details matter, because most people think that they're all hot-footing it through France to come here. France ends up with a bigger total than us, as does Italy, as does Germany, as does Spain. But we come 17th. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Of course, if you're a Farage fan, you can claim that you don't believe the figures, because that little marriage with Donald Trump has created a world in which the truth doesn't matter. You'll just believe whatever you want to believe. I had a caller yesterday said, one man's fact is another man's fiction. Didn't even realise, bless him, how tragic a position that is to have ended up in. No longer trusting objective truth, evidence or statistics. And the battle has been lost. It's a weird one, because who celebrates? Who sits there going, ha ha ha, yes, the truth is dead, long live the lies. I don't know. Even the sort of dyed-in-the-wool Donald Trump fans possibly don't realise that they are celebrating the death of truth, the death of objectivity, the death of evidence. One of the most vicious weapons in that battle has always been race-related dishonesty, xenophobia or racist lies, depending on where you sit on the scale. And that's why I found Shabana Mahmood's speech yesterday, an announcement yesterday, and her key rationale for doing what she's doing so interesting. That's the word I would use. It's interesting. You can't be told by a non-white person that they are witnessing racism and just gloss over it. Listen, if you want to just gloss over it or claim that it's not real, there's entire television stations that have been set up to make you feel at home. But decent people respond to those stories and respond to those claims with concern and compassion and empathy. Indecent people who are in the box seat at the moment, in the driving seat at the moment, accuse them of lying or say they don't care or join in with the abuse of non-white people. So when Shabana Mahmood explains that one of her reasons for wanting to clamp down on illegal immigration or asylum seeking, that battle has been lost. As we said yesterday, we made a list yesterday. I should start keeping my lists. She says she thinks it will reduce racism. And don't laugh at me. Please don't laugh at me. You can laugh at me later as much as you want, but don't laugh at this bit. I really hope she's right. So some of the messages I've been getting recently are quite heartbreaking. I've got a friend, a black friend, whose wife is white and his children are mixed race. He sent me a photograph from his daughter's bedroom where she has covered the Union flag beanbag that she desperately wanted for her birthday, not this year, but the year before. And she's covered it now with a throw. He hasn't mentioned it yet. He doesn't know how to. And he doesn't know for sure that it is symptomatic of any deeper truth. But we know that our streets have been adorned with tatty flags by masked men using ladders in the night to cable tie them to streets where none of the residents have asked for them. And we know why many, if not all of them, have done it. In the same way that cats urinate to mark out their territory or spray to mark out their territory. So these men think that they are marking out their territory by putting up these flags. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of the sort of stories that I'm hearing from people. I can only read out on the show a tiny fraction of what I receive from you. So we know it's on the march. We know it's on the rise. We know that conservative politicians have joined in, people like Katie Lamb talking about cultural coherence. We know that reform politicians positively thrive on it, whether they're watching adverts or simply maligning everybody of a certain background or a certain ethnicity as being criminal or untrustworthy. We know that Robert Jenrick has gone public with his misgivings about black faces or brown faces on the streets of Birmingham. People coming out of their own homes, if they're the wrong colour, it upsets Robert Jenrick, whose own home, of course, is in a village where I think when we checked there was only one non-white person. Imagine what life would be like for him if he had Robert Jenrick's outlook towards people who didn't look like him. So we know all this stuff is going on. We all know that this stuff is going on. But Shabana Mahmood says that her policies are going to make it better. Have a little listen to her saying it.
Britain has a long and proud history of responding with compassion to people fleeing unimaginable horrors. That should continue in a way that is fair and sustainable. So we welcome some of what the Home Secretary have said on that score. But what is not helpful is the Home Secretary claiming that the country is being torn apart by immigration. Acknowledging the challenges facing our nation is one thing, but stoking division by using immoderate language is quite another.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. I have to say to the Honourable Gentleman, I wish I had the privilege of walking around this country and not seeing the division that the issue of migration and asylum system is creating across this country. Unlike him, unfortunately, I am the one that is regularly called a and told to go back home. It is I who know through my personal experience and that of my constituents just how divisive the issue of asylum has become in our country.
17 minutes after 10 is the time, and we bleeped it out because she went there. She used language I can't use on the radio, and I'm glad that she did because it makes you sit up and pay attention. And it's very difficult. That was the Liberal Democrat MP Max Wilkinson asking the question. It's very difficult for a white person to tell a non-white person that their race-related argument is wrong. And it's normally the position of a racist, isn't it? You tell someone that they've got a chip on their shoulder, or you tell someone that they're playing the race card, or you tell someone that the system is not skewed against them, or that racism doesn't exist, or if you're the head of the Metropolitan Police and you've been found to run an institutionally racist organisation, you refuse repeatedly to use the word institutional, even though that's the one that the inquiry heads and the investigators have arrived at. So I don't want to say that she's wrong. I'd certainly believe her when she describes what has happened to her in her life. But I don't know that she's right, that this will make things better. More deportations. The good news is, I don't think that they will be confiscating jewellery at the border, but they may be confiscating other sort of assets. Cars, e-bikes, even cash that people will be required to make a contribution towards their accommodation. I can live with that. There'll also be attempts to recover some of those assets if people fail to declare their assets on arrival. In Denmark, which we're told constantly is the inspiration for this, it's happened exactly 17 times in 6 years, those confiscations. So it seems very much to be something designed to appease the people we were trying to identify yesterday. Yesterday's show, if you haven't listened to it, you can listen on Global Player or the LBC app. Yesterday's show was about who is this designed to please? And if they say we're taking inspiration from Denmark, and Denmark tells us that this particular policy has been implemented on 17 separate occasions in 6 years, you kind of think, well, it's clearly not actually designed to raise money. It's designed to somehow delight people who like the idea of assets being taken away from recently arrived human beings. So again, that takes us back to, who is this designed to appeal to? Who is it designed to appease? The other elements of it, you're probably across by now. Appeals bodies, deportations, financial incentives to leave, family returns, so we'll be deporting more children. A single route of appeal for rejected asylum seekers, so it will slow down the legal processes, access to benefits, a 20-year wait for permanent residency. It is all designed to create the idea that it is... just much harder to avail yourself of the support that this country has always offered. We make it much, much harder, and therefore the people getting the support will be demonstrably much more deserving. So, here's my question for you. Is she right? Will these policies reduce the racism that everybody recognises? And when I say everybody, I mean people who hate it and people who love it. And presumably some people who sit between the two positions, depending on their perspective. But everybody recognises that racism is making its way back towards levels in this country that we haven't seen since the 1970s or the 1980s. Those examples that I just gave you are the perfect proof of it. Katie Lamb, Robert Jenrick, and I forget her name, Sarah Pochin, the Farragist. There is proof of things you could not say in public without losing your job 10 years ago, but you can say them now. Racism is back. It's back with a vengeance. And Shabana Mahmood thinks that clamping down hard on asylum seekers will make things better for non-whites. I'm not. I am white. And I am confident enough to say that I think that she is wrong, but I also want her to be right. I don't know that this is a conversation where we should exclude any voices. I don't know that any racists are going to ring me to say, yep, she's right, I'm going to stop calling people the P word in the street because they're cramping down really hard on asylum seekers. I just can't see, A, that person really existing. And if they do exist, they're not certainly going to ring me on a Tuesday morning. But this seems to me to be the crucial question. It arguably draws the policy back into a more palatable place than we found it in yesterday, but only if it's true. We can't prove it. This is one of those mornings where your opinion is invaluable to me because it's all we've got. Shabana Mahmood expressed an opinion. It wasn't fact, it wasn't maths, it wasn't statistics, it wasn't even philosophy. She believes that by publicly and in some cases performatively, I'm thinking of the asset confiscation, she believes that by publicly and performatively making it harder to seek asylum in this country, to successfully seek asylum in this country, the tidal wave of racism that is washing over all of us, but obviously affects non-white people considerably differently and more profoundly than it affects white people, Shabana Mahmood believes that by making life measurably harder for all asylum seekers, the tidal wave of racism unleashed by Farage and Brexit and Katie Lamb and Robert Jenrick and all the rest of them, she believes that the tidal wave of racism will be stemmed and turned back by making life much harder for asylum seekers. Is she right? 0345 6060 973. That's the question. And your answer, you, I'm talking to you, is as valid and as pertinent and as important as Shabana Mahmood's. Don't forget that. Never forget that. You also may have the lived experience that she describes. And she thinks that turning up the heat on all asylum seekers will make your life better by reducing the amount of racism in it. And I really want her to be right, but I don't right now think that she is.
LBC.
Cybersecurity matters more than ever for businesses across the UK. LBC's been exploring how cyber attacks happen, who's behind them, and the steps you can take to protect your business.
Probably the number one route in would be phishing emails. Old software that's not been patched or updated is another classic way in. And then there's always those people that are clicking on links that they shouldn't do, provides a route through for those hackers.
Watch the full interview on our free Global Player app. Thanks to BT Business, LBC.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
25 minutes after 10. It's the nearest thing, isn't it, to a corrective to yesterday's conversation, where a lot of people expressed deep misgivings about the idea of the 17th most popular asylum destination in Europe when it comes to per capita comparisons, needs to work much harder to make itself less attractive. But if it does reduce the racism that is polluting our discourse and our society at the moment, then perhaps it's a price worth paying. We would, in a sense, be looking after our own people with foreign heritage by being much more robust and strict with other more recently arrived people of foreign heritage. Vijay's in Colindale. Vijay, what do you think?
She's absolutely wrong. Absolutely wrong. It's like Zach Lansky from the Green Party has clearly stated, we're focusing on the wrong issue. It's poverty. It's poverty. People don't have enough money. The government doesn't have enough money to pay for the health service. They're upset because they don't have access to services. And the access to services is all to do with money.
So if the cost of living doesn't go up and all of these measures are, I beg your pardon, if the cost of living crisis doesn't improve, if the cost of living doesn't become easier and all of these policies are introduced, whether they are successful or not doesn't actually matter, because if people can't feel an improvement in their own existence, then the invitation to blame it all on the 30,000 souls crossing the channel in boats will remain irresistible. Are you sure?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, look, if you've not learned anything...
What if he can't do it anymore? What if Farage has to put his Fisher-Price binoculars back in their box? What if the front pages are no longer full? What if the BBC no longer has a correspondent in Dover whose only job seems to be to count people arriving? What if none of that lands anymore? And we know that regular immigration is going off a cliff. So the people, and I struggle to identify them, but I do believe they exist. The people who have, quotes, legitimate concerns, end quotes, they have not got any legitimate concerns anymore, and all you're left with is the rump of nativist and racist bigots.
Look what's going on with America and Trump. Everyone in America now is waking up to Trump. He hasn't delivered on the cost of living. Over here, the cost of living is one of the biggest issues.
He hasn't delivered on the cost of living.
He hasn't.
I misheard you. It says he has, but it's all going worse. But and the racism hasn't gone away. Well, no, that doesn't answer my question, actually. Oddly, I'm not being pedantic, but if Trump had delivered on the cost of living and he still needed to send armed, masked men into schools to arrest teachers and priests and the rest of it, then your point would stand. But she would argue that the cost of living, it wouldn't matter. If the immigration policies, oh no, you are right and I'm wrong, because he has had a big impact on people crossing the borders, and yet, I don't know, the anger at immigration hasn't gone away. The cost of living might not have changed. Immigration has changed. I think your average Trump voter is probably happy with what he's done with regard to immigration if they voted for him for his policies on immigration. I've seen a hemorrhaging of support among Hispanic communities, but that's because they didn't realise he meant them. And I don't know that transatlantic parallels are as powerful in this country, because race relations are so different in a country steeped in the legacies of slavery. compared to a country that, that mostly profited from it rather than deployed it in it on its own shores. It's coming up to 10:30. This is a really important question, and I think we phrased it right. Very simple. Will it work? If Shabana Mahmood, and I think she probably means it, really believes that these policies will reduce, what would you call it, asylum-inspired or asylum-motivated racism, then it's a reason to support it. But you have to believe and you have to persuade me that you honestly think it will work. And it's 1-0. Vijay has opened the scoring with a very resounding and comprehensive, no, of course it won't work. If anything, it will make things worse. It's coming up to 10:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, and Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The Community Secretary has defended the government's plans to overhaul the asylum system. Steve Reid has told backbench Labour MPs opposing the proposals that they were elected on a manifesto promise to secure the UK's borders. Housing developments within a 15-minute walk of a train station in England are going to receive a default yes under new planning rules. It's part of efforts to help meet Labour's promise of building 1.5 million new homes by the next election. And the government is reportedly planning to ban the reselling of live event tickets for profit. Ministers are said to be drawing up proposals to outlaw sales above face value in a crackdown on ticket touts. LBC weather, a cold but dry day for many, some outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC. This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £100,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5pm Friday and you could get a call with £100,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822 00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only global network competition. Full rules and free entry at ChristmasCashCall.com.
Waitrose presents
and the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Enough for me.
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble wrapped in dry-cured beechwood smoked bacon with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Ooh, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helps advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Are you a London black cab driver thinking of ways to boost your earnings during those quieter times? Why not consider Uber? We can give your meter a wake-up call. Join close to 1,000 black cab drivers already on Uber. Black cabs on Uber are priced by your meter, and the service fee will be no more than 5% until the end of 2025. Turn downtime into prime time. Go to uber.com/blackcabs to start earning today. Terms and conditions apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
20 years for a passport, right, Scott? Mo Farah would have had to represent Somaliland in 2012. Rick asks, will it get the flags off the lampposts? I think you're supposed to say our lamppost, Rick. Whose lamppost? Our lamppost. If the answer is no, then she's wasting her time. We can't solve anything until we take back our streets and our national symbol. She is wrong, says Salama. It will not reduce racism. It will embolden the racist. This is like the bullied becoming the bully or being relieved that the bully has started to punch on someone else. Jim writes, of course, you only have lefty callers talking about racism. To be fair, Jim, I think I've only had one caller so far, which is a valid grounds for criticism, but not exactly proof of your thesis. It's not about that. It's numbers and what it costs this country with only young men crossing the channel. That's Jim trying to answer the question of whether or not racism will be reduced by Shabana Mahmood's recently announced policies. Dedicated several hours to these policies on LBC, but it's managed to somehow pass Jim by. On week, should we have a look at his history? Oh, there it is. Donald Trump fan, but definitely not a racist. Arwad is in Liverpool. Arwad, what do you reckon?
Hiya. I know callers generally start off by saying they love you before they disagree with you.
They don't have to. I think let's work on the presumption that everybody loves me, Arwad, shall we? And then crack on from there. Go on.
So I just want to preface that I don't mean this with any negative sense. I'm from the Muslim community. My parents came over from Sudan, and I think Shabana's policies will work to some degree in reducing hostility towards immigrants or people who look for or people who like me look foreign.
Do you?
But I don't think they'll do it to as significant a degree to reduce the level of vitriol, the level of fervor that's currently there. I feel really nervous about.
Take your time. You've got all the time you want, and I don't want you to say anything you might regret later.
I've pondered this for a really long time.
Of course.
And I used to think that the integration to some degree was mentioned in a very racist context, and to some degree, I believe that some of the actors are doing it to, you know, because they want to deport anyone that looks foreign.
Well, they say so now. They didn't used to actually say that out loud, but they've started, I think they call it compulsory repatriation, don't they?
Yeah, it's called remigration.
Remigration,
it's a policy that was parroted by the AFD and now is being adopted across far-right spaces in Europe. There are issues within integration in this country, and I think contrasting two communities, I grew up in Northwest London, the community I grew up in, you had a variety of people who've come across from abroad, but people who had come from generations here. But the good thing about that is it wasn't particularly homogenous.
I don't want to get off topic, I mean people are spooked by communities they are not part of that don't seem to contain people who don't look like them. That is usually what we mean when we hear complaints about a lack of integration. You never hear people complaining about the lack of integration, for example, in the village where Robert Jenrick lives, where there is one non-white person. But if you go to parts of Bradford or parts of Birmingham, and the immigration demographics mean that people have chosen to live in areas where they won't stick out like sore thumbs, and then over generations and over decades, that turns into a majority and then a plurality, then almost a unanimity of ethnicity. So there will be streets and areas and parts of town where everybody, or almost everybody, has roots in the same part of the subcontinent. That's what people mean by a failure to integrate. But it's entirely one-way traffic. And I've never fully understood why I should be upset about the ethnicity of people on a street I don't live on. If I lived on it, then I know what it feels like to be the only black man in Robert Jenrick's village, and I presume we'd tell him to just get over it or move if he doesn't like it. So that's the bit about this argument I've never fully understood. What are people unhappy about? Not being able to live on a street they don't want to live on.
So I'll propose what I think needs to happen. So the community I grew up in had, like I said, had a lot of people who'd either come from abroad or were the first or second generation descendants of people who'd come abroad. And, you know, most people but they came from very different areas. And because they came from very different areas, it made it easier for them to coalesce around, you know, this idea, you know.
But this has got, respectfully, this has got absolutely nothing to do with illegal immigration or asylum seeking. So why are we talking about it?
Because I think, you know.
I honestly don't know.
I think illegal immigration is to some degree a drain on the public budget. But I think even if that gets dealt with completely, I don't actually think.
It's going to reduce potential negativity to people who look like you.
You know, a lot of the images and complaints that are happening aren't really the cases that you see pop up in the news. I think with the exception of Hadashka Batu, most of them are from the descendants of first or second generation people.
Fourth or fifth. I mean, if you're black, then Daniel Hannan thinks that you're going to be prone to violence because you're listening to ancestral voices about a neater distillation of profoundly racist worldviews as you're ever going to encounter. But that, I suppose, where we are is mapping the difference between the racism that existed 10 years ago and the racism that we're dealing with now. It would be a win for Shabana Mahmood if we went back to pre-Brexit levels of racism.
There's just one bit that I want to get across that I didn't get to.
Go on.
Mostly my fault. There are, however, I think, streets where, let's say, someone has come from, let's say, this, this one specific part of a country where, let's say if a street or, is mostly composed of people, let's say, from Pakistan, you have a community there. You have, people who know your language, and that's great. But I think the issue is in certain parts where that is the case, is that it gets very,
You have made this point. I can't, but possibly a bit prematurely, I made it for you. You're describing the people who are unhappy about a plurality of people in a community, on a street, in an area, who don't look like them. And that's fine. I mean, they exist. I just think it's a bogus argument, because you never hear it the other way around. You never hear people complaining about a lack of integration in the village where Robert Jenrick lives. You also never hear it about places like Mayfair, where the most expensive streets in this country will be populated almost exclusively by foreigners. And, of course, the parents, and certainly the grandparents of some of the people that you're talking about, have ended up coalescing, to use your word, around a certain area, because they can remember when the Tories put up posters saying, vote Labour if you want an N-word for a neighbour. Who on earth would want to live next to anybody who had a poster like that, or potentially might have a poster like that in their country? And, of course, for many people, the flags that are currently adorning lampposts up and down our country are a much subtler way of making precisely the same point. But again, I'm putting you down as a score draw, Awad, is that you think it might work a bit, but it's not going to address, if you like, the more deep-rooted causes of unhappiness, whether you think those causes are justified or not. 0345 60 60 973. Alexander is in Wellingborough. Alexander, what do you think?
Hi there. All right, so basically, my position is this. So to clarify things, I'm born here, I'm of Jamaican heritage, and I'm likely to vote Greens next election, just to contextualise who I am. Right. So what I would say is this, is that I do think that ultimately appeasing racists isn't probably going to work. But however, I think that she probably needs to do this, because then it takes away the plausible deniability. When people are going like, oh, well, actually, we're just bothered about the small boats. Yeah. No, what you're actually upset about is how many black and brown people are in your country, regardless of whether we're born here or not. So, like, that's really what it is.
And some of them are saying that. Some of them are saying that now. Some of them never will, because they're too frightened or too ashamed. But some of them never will, because they genuinely don't feel that way. Is that they are, I think there are a lot of people who are exercised by the small boats, whether they should be or not, who are not exercised by the colour of your skin.
And I agree with that. Look, to be honest with you, I've sat around with my family. There are people within my own family who say small boats, it's not really ideal. I don't think it's a straight racial issue.
No.
I don't. But however, I do think that it's being used as a proxy to talk about the fact that they don't like seeing so many people on the telly with different skin colours, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So it removes, well, what you've just described, the plausible deniability. It's as if the tide goes out on the small boats crisis or situation, and you can see who's wearing swimming trunks. When the tide's gone out, the actual naked racists will be exposed. And the people whose concern was genuinely about this issue, rightly or wrongly, because when you dig into the numbers and the statistics and the hotels and where we sit in European comparisons, it's nowhere near the problem that people believe that it is. But you can't blame them for believing it, because everybody keeps telling them that it is. Then Shabana Mahmood's vision might be realised. So you get what she's saying, and you kind of buy it.
I kind of get it. And for clarity, look, right, for like are small boats an absolute priority to me? No, but I'm not going to call anybody racist for having a concern over
Not over small boats. That's why you go in on Robert Jenrick in Birmingham or Katie Lamb wanting to deport people for cultural coherence or the woman not liking faces like yours appearing in adverts for cars on television.
There we go.
That's racism. But saying, there's two ways into it. You might have been persuaded by the threat, by the security threat, which is unfortunate, but not racist. And then secondly, you might be, simply persuaded by the cost of living. We can't afford to look after all these people who were not born here. Therefore, something must be done about it. Address those quotes, legitimate concerns, quotes, brackets. I still don't think they are brackets, but for the benefit of the doubt, let's say they're legitimate concerns. Let's say they're addressed. Then the people with concerns, but not racists, will be quietened, will be calmed, will be reassured.
Exactly.
I hope you're right. And that's one all, with Arwad's score draw at the moment. So it could work. I love that phrase, plausible deniability. I love it generally, so it covers so much ground. But in this context of this conversation, that's the point, isn't it? The problem is that everybody telling opinion pollsters that they're minded to vote for Farage is comfortable with racism. That's just, I mean, an observable fact. Have a look at what he says about people who speak foreign without mentioning that his own children do. Have a look at what he says about children in school who've got English as a second language without mentioning that his own children do. Have a look at what he says about foreigners in general, shifting effortlessly from Romanians to some other unidentified ethnicity and who we would and wouldn't want to live next door to. That's the problem. You've got high numbers at the moment who are supremely comfortable with racism, some of whom would even go and march to the tune of a convicted fraudster who literally came perilously close to ruining the trial of grooming gang members while pretending that he's dedicated his whole life to trying to bring them to justice. You've got a lot of people, perhaps, who, when the tide goes out, would be standing there in the all together. But we just never know how many. That's what yesterday's show was about. How do you know? How do you know the difference between someone who is, if you like, a victim of the rhetoric, the propaganda, the discourse, the conversation, and someone who hates black people or hates brown people or hates all Muslims? How do you tell the difference? Shabana Mahmood thinks that this policy will almost point out the difference for us. Alexander agrees, up to a point. I would really like to.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Myself seeing it, the issues in Crowborough and East Sussex, thousands, I think there are about 2,000 people on the street. The town's only got 20,000 people, so 10% of the places turning out every weekend to protest 600 people arriving, mainly men, on boats. They don't want it. And they hear, people hear these arguments of, oh, it's our colonial past, oh, you're creating a racist narrative. They go, no, don't care. I don't care. You cannot put these people here.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear all change please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the content production industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Daisy, a technical content production student in year 12.
We've already learned how to create content and work with employers in the media industry. I love working in the studio, making my own podcast, and can't wait to start my 45-day work placement next term.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. Globalacademy.com.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 10 to 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Pros and cons of all Mahmood's asylum seeker policy reforms. The Times has a crack at working out the plausibility of them and indeed the impact rating, the bits that might work and the bits that might prove popular. And of course, why she is doing it is political more than anything else. And it's necessary. I mean, listen, the Conservatives have already had to go. Labour have currently got their chance to do something about it. Whether it is a good thing, a bad thing, a nonsense or a necessary, doesn't matter. The small boats crossing the English Channel with some sort of 20 to 30,000 people a year in them are the defining issue of our age. Being very carefully cultivated to be the defining issue of our age. From the moment Nigel Farage turned up in Dover with his Fisher-Price binoculars, I've been telling you that this was going to happen. Some of you didn't believe me. Some of you thought I was exaggerating. But here we are now. It's the single most important issue in a country where care homes are closing, where the cost of children are going hungry, where food banks are proliferating, where NHS waiting lists are thankfully finally coming down but still remain unconscionably long, where morale in the NHS has gone off a cliff, where there are 25,000 vacancies for nurses, pubs and restaurants. The hospitality sector is screaming in horror at what has been done to it by a succession of events and policies, including Rachel Reeves's national insurance changes. All of these things don't matter. All that matters is the small boats. I saw some footage, which I hope was AI, at the weekend of people in Spain, British people in Spain, protesting against small boats under the banner of the flag waivers, under the banner of the flag putter-uppers. So immigrants in Spain. So it doesn't matter. It's not immigrants, just the small boats. So if she curtails the crossings, does the racism dissipate? It's not going to disappear. It's always there. You can see racists incredibly emboldened by recent events, coming out and saying so now in ways that they'd have been far too embarrassed, frightened or ashamed to do so in the heady days of political correctness or when the woke mob had a stranglehold on public discourse. Back when being a racist was embarrassing and shameful. Those days are currently over. Does curtailing the crossings, as Shabana Mahmood aims to do, signal the return of the days when people were too embarrassed to be racist in public? I hope so, but I still don't think so. Ali is in Woking. Ali, what would you like to say?
Morning, James. Hello. Big fan of yours.
You're very kind.
It's nice to be speaking to you. I just wanted to say that I don't think it's going to work. Asylum seekers, I believe, are just the low-hanging fruit. There's something quite tangible. There's something that people like Farage can point to. But he's constantly conflating the issue of asylum seekers with illegal aliens, with British people of colour, people like me.
Yeah, but, I'm just thinking back to his track record. He doesn't get anywhere like the traction that he's getting with the small boats when he's complaining about people, when he's complaining about bilingual children in British primary schools or people talking foreign on trains. I mean, he's almost like a kind of wheel of fortune fascism, where you spin the arrow and see where it points and see whether that gets people to come across to your side of politics. And it's pointed at loads and loads of other places. Children with a foreign parent, like his children. Children with English as a second language or not as their mother tongue, like his children. People talking foreign on trains, like his children, potentially. He tried all of those things, living next door to Romanians. An outburst that actually prompted the Sun newspaper, of all places, to call the outburst racist in 2014. He's tried so many other things. The small boats is the only one that's really slapped.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's very effective in leading with that. But if you notice, he'll often start with small boats and then he'll move on to, in the same press conference, talking about British Muslims being an invading army, for example, in a press conference he gave recently. The reason I called in, James, is because I lived in Denmark for 17 years.
Go on.
And I lived through the period where all of the rhetoric got very toxic around immigrants, particularly immigrants of colour. Luckily, I was considered British and white for some reason when I lived there, so I wasn't that affected. But I speak Danish, I read the papers, and I think the other part of this question is, you know, what problem are we solving?
Mm.
Because racism was never the problem. The problem that Farage keeps pointing to is things like, you know, crime, you know, violence against women. And, you know, just to point out one statistic, I mean, Denmark's almost eliminated all immigration. Net migration last year in Denmark was 25,000. The growth rate has halved.
Really?
Since they brought in these
I haven't got the wherewithal to check this while you say it. I've got no reason to doubt it. But what Shabana Mahmood would point to is the fact that the asylum applications have gone down by about a third since these policies were brought in. I mean, you're telling us everything else has gone down as well.
Yeah, because it doesn't, you know, I mean, you're addressing a mythical problem, both in the UK and in Denmark. If you've ever walked around Denmark or Copenhagen, it's one of the most homogenous societies. It's a lovely place,
yeah.
And what I'm saying is there was very few immigrants in the first place. And that's the problem. When you try to make real changes to policy to address mythical problems, you don't achieve anything positive, and you can often do a lot of damage. Brexit's a great example in this country.
Well, what about the Danish People's Party finishing second in 2015 and finishing third in 2019? So two things can be true at the same time. These policies were designed to slay a mythical dragon, but people were voting for the dragon slayers, even though it was mythical. So people were buying tickets for the ghost train and trying to sell them tickets to the Speak Your Weight machine didn't work. So Mette Frederiksen pops up and starts flogging tickets for the ghost train, and people buy them. And the far-right party, the populist right-wing party, is pushed from second place to 12th.
So that might be why
she's doing it. She's probably not going to come out and admit that.
Yeah, because the real problems don't change. I mean, just to give you one statistic, I mean, just like in the UK, a lot of violence against women was blamed on immigrants, during my time there. Sexual violence against women has tripled in Denmark since they brought in these policies.
Really?
Because it was never done by people of a certain ethnicity or migration status, of course it wasn't. No, it's kind of the same here, and their power has sort of waned, but I think that's linked to a lot of the real issues, structural issues that they have with funding pensions, staffing the NHS or their version of the NHS, driving growth. I think they're still relatively popular, but
this is the question of our age, or this particular age, which is, you look at the facts regarding comparisons. We're now modelling ourselves on a country with a population roughly the same as Yorkshire's. We're 17th on the European League table of per capita. We're behind Germany, France, Italy, Spain on the totals. The hotels that we're told they stay in are not the hotels that people have in their imagination when they hear the words hotel. Almost all of the rhetorical devices used to inflame the population are bogus, are false, are dishonest. But if you promise to slay a mythical dragon and people believe that the dragon is real, then you're onto a winner. That's her calculation, isn't it? I mean, you're right to pick punch holes in it, but that is clearly her calculation, and she would point to the electoral calculus in Denmark, which has seen the populist party go from 2nd to 17th.
Yeah, but the problem is, I mean, it's a psychological construct that's not going to go away, because we had Brexit and all the problems are related to the European Union previously.
This is Brexit 2.0. No, I know.
This is exactly. And then once the asylum seekers stop coming, it's going to be move on to the next thing, you know, which is probably going to be, you know, British people who don't share Farage's values, apparently, despite, you know, working in the NHS.
Oh, we're already there. I mean, already having people say that you can't, some people who lived here, born here, done everything here, educated here, paid taxes here, they're not really British. They're promoting people like that within their ranks at the moment. But Farage has always been slightly wary of going full ethno-nationalist, even though many people that have watched him closely over the years believe that that is absolutely at his core. He's always been quite careful to keep the absolutely chomping racists at arm's length, because he's desperate to be respectable. Like all people who like to describe themselves as anti-establishment figures, he's absolutely desperate to be embraced by the establishment, and latterly he is being. So whether or not he risks that by going full ethno-nationalist, only time will tell. Thank you, Ali.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the Community Secretary has defended the government's plans to overhaul the asylum system. The government's been forced to backtrack on policies in recent months after objections from Labour backbenchers. The plans have been described by some MPs as cruel and dystopian. But Minister Steve Reid says the party needs to unite behind the Home Secretary.
Every single one of us who is a Labour MP was elected on the same manifesto. And that manifesto committed us now as a government to securing our borders. It's very important that we do that. The British people expect us to do that.
The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has accused the Chancellor of planning to set out a smokescreen in her budget to cover up tax rises. It's reported that Rachel Reeves will freeze tax thresholds until 2030 when she outlines her plans next week. When inflation and wage growth is taken into account, a freeze could mean that more people will be paying a higher rate of tax. Speaking at a press conference this morning, Mrs. Badenoch accused Labour of considering the move to pay for weaknesses on welfare.
And if it wasn't already clear that Labour are the party of welfare, not the party of working people, it is clear now. Because these changes they are making are not fair, they are not right, and we will oppose them every single step of the way.
The government's expected to announce a ban on the resale of concert tickets for more than the face value. The change would be aimed at banning touts from buying up large numbers of tickets and then selling them on through resale websites. The competitions watchdog is investigating 8 companies over their online pricing. 2 ticket resale sites and 2 driving schools are among those being looked into. It's investigating what's known as drip pricing, where extra charges are added to increase costs. And housing developments within a 15-minute walk of a train station in England are going to receive a default yes under new planning rules. It's part of efforts to help Labour's promise to build 1.5 million new homes by the next general election. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 100 points at 95.69. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, a cold but dry end to the morning. Outbreaks of rain will develop in the northwest with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 11. The dictionary. I think you can almost say the dictionary, although probably not, because it's the Cambridge dictionary, not the Oxford. They've picked a word of the year. And I wonder if you know what it means. I'll tell you what the word is shortly, and then we can work out whether we know what it means. I thought I did, but I got it a little bit wrong. I'm probably moving in the next hour towards... I've chosen not to do the conversation about why it's so effective. We may do that tomorrow. We'll almost certainly do it before the end of the week. Simple question of why this one topic. I just thought that. It never really occurred to me before. You think of all the things that Farage has tried to excite voters with over the years, and none of them have landed, apart from leaving the European Union, which, of course, turned out to be an absolutely stupid thing to do, as pretty much anybody paying proper attention could have told you it would be. But that worked. It's as if he kind of reaches around, desperately trying to find a lever he can pull that will introduce division and encourage people to both turn on each other and undertake enormous acts of self-harm. So I'm going to try and get them to attack school children. I'm going to try and get them to hate their neighbours. I'm going to try and get them to hate all people who are brown or all people who've come from Romania or all people who are Polish. I'm going to try and get them to hate everyone in Brussels. And it works a bit. It works like 10 to 15%. But then I'm going to try and get them to hate Brussels. I'm going to try and get them to hate the European Union. Ding, 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 ding. Massive win. I guess when the newspapers join in, it works. When the newspapers don't join in, it doesn't work. So you go back to 2014 when he was being racist. Even the Sun would describe him as racist. They wouldn't do now. That's what we mean by the Overton window moving. And with the small boats, ding, 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 ding. That's worked. A lot of the other things he tries to excite people with or get people to turn on each other or hate their neighbours with doesn't work. But that one's really, really worked. And I am interested in why. That gulf between the second most important issue facing the country, but only the seventh most important issue facing me, to the point where you've got people marching through the streets of Benidorm calling for the small boats to be stopped, which is insane, especially when you make a list of all the things that we should be caring about more. One of his mates has decided to attack autistic children who wear earmuffs today. More on that a little later. You think I exaggerate when I say it's not even about the targets. Ear defenders, the things that you wear. The best way to... No, I'll do that later in the hour. I want to set up this topic first. Because if I've never alienated you before in the course of presenting this programme, then I suspect I might be about to alienate you now. This is a subject I find absolutely fascinating. And I think it's because I do get it. I do get it. 4/5 of people, 4/5, 80% of people with £1 million or more in the actual bank. So that is cash savings. Do not think that they are rich. I mean, when you come to income, it becomes arguably even more interesting. And I don't mind which of the two you pick as your way into this conversation. And you are, as ever, of course, welcome to pick both of them. But I love this idea of why we think, or when we think we're rich, and when we don't think we're rich. We will probably do a couple of questions or take a couple of calls on the very definition of rich. What is the very definition of rich for you? Because it's not going to be the same. 3/4 of people who qualify to pay the top tax rate, which is an income of £125,000 or more, do not feel rich. And this is prompted partly by the fact that we are likely to be hit hardest, quite rightly. Who else are you going to hit hardest, if not the highest earners in the country, by whatever Rachel Reeves finally ends up announcing in her budget? Earnings over £125,140 are currently taxed at 45p. And you also lose the personal allowance of tax-free income. And I get this. I'm really cognitively dissonant on this, and I'm going to tell you why. So you see the article sometimes, usually in the Daily Telegraph, occasionally in the Daily Mail, but the Daily Telegraph generally pitches higher when it comes to inherited wealth and that kind of entitlement. You get the article saying, you know, I earn £200,000 a year and I can't afford VAT on school fees, or I earn £200,000 a year and I can barely make ends meet. And this is where I alienate you, quite possibly, because I don't get the world's smallest violin out of the attic, but I do get it. So, would you like to hear my definition of rich? And this plays slightly into the territory of non-material wealth. I know that we are living in a material world. And I am obviously not a material girl. But I do recognise that there will be people who have got less money than you who feel richer, who feel happier. If you suffer from competition syndrome, if you suffer from competitiveness, as a lot of us do, I think probably men more than women, but I don't know that I'd bet my house on that, then I read some years ago that the best thing you can do is live in the biggest house on your street. If you live in the biggest house on your street, you'll be happy. Even if you lived on a bigger house on another street that had lots of even bigger houses. So it's not the size of your house that makes that kind of character happy. And I think I used to be that kind of character. It's not the size of the house that makes you happy. It's the comparison with everybody else on your street. So that person will feel rich. The biggest house on your street will make you feel rich. I define richness as being able to carry on exactly as you are, even if you stopped earning. And that's the difference between wealth and income. So whatever you do in terms of holidays, in terms of luxuries, in terms of turning the heating on, whatever you can afford to do, whether you do it or not, if your earned income, as opposed to income that comes from investments or comes from capital, comes from wealth, if you could live for the rest of your life pretty much as you live now, if your affordability didn't change, even if your income through your work and labour ended tomorrow, then I would call you rich. I would call you rich. But I might be earning more than you at the moment. I just have outgoings. Most obviously two of them. that's parenthood. And then perhaps I'd move my definition of rich to include what I might leave to my children, which was not something I ever really thought about until relatively recently. Until I suppose they started approaching adulthood. Some people are thinking about, well, really rich people, inherited wealth, you are conscious of it almost from the moment you are born. The responsibility of the scion of an aristocratic family or a very wealthy family is to safeguard what you hand on to the next generation. That, to me, is the biggest gulf in our socioeconomic strata. The single biggest gulf between us and them. So I don't care how much you earn. I don't care how much you've got. If your raison d'etre in life, if your purpose in life is to protect the pot that you hand on to the next generation, then you are probably descended from one of William the Conqueror's friends. For me, it's a great obstacle to society, to well-run society, to have that level of inherited wealth. Would I be saying that if I was on the right side of it? Probably not. So you can discount my comments as the politics of envy. But I genuinely think the biggest distinction between people in our country is that one. The people who are here essentially to protect the pot of gold they inherited for the person that they're going to hand it on to. And that is going to be a tiny, 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 tiny proportion of our population. The rest of us, if we're lucky, think about what we might be able to leave to our kids if we cut our cloth a bit, or if we change our priorities, or if we don't go on holiday for a few. You see what I mean? So that's one of my definitions of rich: financial independence. And that's a completely movable feast. You could be getting by on 15 grand a year, 25 grand a year, 50 grand a year, and think, if the numbers crunched — a couple of my friends did this during lockdown — they crunched all the numbers and they thought, yeah, I could actually live the life I'm liking without going to work anymore. I don't need the earned income. I've put enough aside. I've got a good pension. I've done, and or you could just not need much. You could derive, you know, the drummer of Queen has never moved out of the perfectly pleasant, but essentially ordinary for South London house in, I think it's in Putney, that he's lived in for 40 or 50 years. He left Queen when Freddie Mercury died. Every now and then someone will do a newspaper article on him, and we're supposed to be staggered and stunned by the fact that he feels no particular desire to live in a castle or to fly around the place in a helicopter. I don't know. If I had his money, I probably would live a slightly more luxurious life than he does. But he's rich in every sense of the word. He's happy with what he's got, and he's got way, 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 way more than he needs. So if you're happy with what you've got, you're rich. Even if you ain't got much. That's what Jesus would teach you, you know. So when you come to people who've got £1 million in savings but don't feel rich, you perhaps, like me, get a little bit confused. Working on the presumption that you're home and dry, if you've got £1 million in savings, then you've paid off your mortgage as well. So you've got a lot more in assets. This is cash savings. And you don't feel rich. We're going to do the hardcore question, and we're going to do the hippie question. What do you think the poorest fifth of the population had last year in disposable income? The poorest people, all 20% of them. So remember, this is an average. So some people will be way, way lower than this. Some people have next to no disposable income. But the poorest fifth, the poorest 20% of the population has £16,800 in disposable income. That's the median household disposable income for the poorest 20% of the population. And you will be listening to this program. So the bass player, not the drummer. My mistake. I knew when I said it, I was going to get that wrong. There'll be people listening to this now who have disposable income of £16,800 or less, and they're hearing people with over £1 million in cash savings describe themselves as not rich. And I just find all this fascinating. 11:15 is the time. Why? I don't want to confine it to people who are in that category but are not rich. But I want you to explain to someone with 17 grand's worth of disposable income how someone with £1 million can think that they're not rich. If it's you, if you're on 125 grand a year or more, and or you've got £1 million in cash savings, explain to someone getting by on 17 grand's worth of disposable income a year why you are not rich. Also, I want to be a little bit fussy on this one. Not like trying to be clever or anything like that, but just hand on heart, when would you feel rich? When did you feel rich? When was the point at which you felt, yeah, that's it now? Because I am absolutely fascinated by the concept of enough. You can look at some of the richest people on the planet, and it's clear that they haven't got enough. You know? They're never going to have enough, largely because they think money is going to solve problems that money can't solve. For example, buying Twitter is never going to stop you being a prat in the eyes of almost everybody who encounters you and meets you. The self-loathing engendered from that, well, it might muster up some sympathy, but trying to be a better person is what makes people like you more. Not buying a social media platform so you can give it to all the racists in the hope that they will lionize and praise you. That won't be enough. That won't feed or fill whatever that gaping chasm in your soul is. But enough, for me, if you've got enough, you're rich. How many of us think we've got enough? Answer, how many of us could carry on living as we're living now, even if we never went to work again? So, explain to somebody who is listening to this with rising blood pressure why earning over 125 grand a year does not mean you're rich, okay? 0345-6060-973. Explain to John, for example, who tells me that if his income stopped now, right now, if he stopped earning, he reckons he could live comfortably until about 3 o'clock this afternoon. And that's going to be a heck of a lot more common than people who've got £1 million in cash savings or who earn over £125,000 a year. So I just want to work it out. I just want to know, again, as in the last hour in many ways, your very personal perspective on richness. And, I mean, the thing that really intrigues me, and I can't do it myself, I'll have a go in a minute by quoting Mr. Micawber almost certainly, but how do you think, whether it's you or not, but if it's you, obviously you'll go to the front of the queue. How can somebody with £1 million in cash savings not be rich? Explain it to a sceptic, or indeed to John. 0345 60 60 973. What do you think the word means now that you've paused for a moment to contemplate it? But more intriguingly, more crucially, how can somebody earning over £125,000 a year not think that they're rich? And it's not the same question, this, although it sounds the same. How can somebody with £1 million in cash savings not think that they are rich? How does that happen? How does that work? And how do we unravel this extraordinary contradiction? All right, 0345 60 60 973. John, if it's any consolation to you, a lot of people are telling me they wouldn't last until 3 o'clock. And that is the backdrop against which I want to examine this idea, that if you've got the kind of income or the kind of savings that most of your compatriots can only dream of, short of a lottery win, it ain't ever going to happen for the huge, huge, huge majority of the population. They think you're rich. You think you're not. Tell them why you're not. Tell them how that works. 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need. It's 1120.
LBC.
Dunelm Bedford at Alban Retail Park has had a makeover. From kitchenware and lighting to bedding and so much more, we have everything you need to make any space feel like home. So come down and see us. For more details and exclusive follower benefits, head over to our Dunelm Bedford Community Group on Facebook. Dunelm,
the home of homes.
You know, sometimes you just want to mosey. Travel your own road. Slow things down a mite. Meet the locals and smell the coffee. So friends, take time to sit down with the folks at Little America and let them tailor-make your trip to Canada and the U.S. just the way you like it. For slow travel that nourishes the soul, head to littleamerica.co.uk.
When you buy a BMW-approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 60 60 973.
Do you think you can learn to care about different things? I mean, apart from a massive life change like death, you know, bereavement, you lose your job and your income is decimated. Can you learn not to care about the things you used to care about when you had a big income? I hope you can. Not just because it might happen to me one day, but just because it would be a terrible way to live, constantly looking in the rearview mirror, pining for the days when you had more. I don't know, but I'm fascinated by the concept of wealth and the fact that many people you would consider wealthy do not think that they are. Although, I have got this message in the back of my mind from David. James, he writes, you're a great debater, but you're not going to pull this one off. When you have to consider whether you're rich or not, you already are. Except an awful lot of people are considering whether they're rich or not and concluding that they're not. And I'm interested in how that happens. That's all. Some of the answers are obvious, some perhaps less so. Martin is in Crowborough. Martin, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James.
Hello.
I think it's a really good question. The fact that I think it's the rich thing, right? I don't think most people who earn $125,000 feel rich, depending obviously on where they live.
Yes,
if you've got
true.
A lot of money, and you've saved it all and you've got millions and millions of pounds, that's absolutely fine, right? You've done a great job because you haven't spent to the ends of your means. But a lot of people with that kind of money will spend to the end of their means, and really that's up to them. But I think that $125,000 today in the South doesn't give you a great deal for your future. If you want to save and retire, you know, I want to retire. What are you going to do? You haven't got enough.
I mean, I can argue with you by pointing out people in very different situations from you, but I can't argue with you when we're talking. This is the Mr. Micawber quote, isn't it? Annual income of £20, annual expenditure of £19.06, result happiness or wealth or comfortableness. Annual income of £20, annual expenditure £20, aught and six, result misery. So it doesn't matter whether it's £20 annual income or £20,000 annual income. If you're living very, very close to the wire, you're not going to feel rich. If you've got loads and loads of space between income and outgoing, then you are, regardless of what the overall figure is. And almost all of us push it, don't we, Martin? Almost all of us think, do you know what, I've got one more house move in me before we settle, or I really want a new car, or why can't I go on that holiday and not that holiday? It's a weird process, but it's what drives capitalism.
Absolutely, and then you don't feel like you have money because you generally don't fall into a £125,000 job. You work your way up to it. So you generally spend what you earn, and then you get the next bigger house, and you drive a reasonable car. It might not be, you know, a £50,000-£100,000 car or whatever it is. It might be a £20,000 car, but you end up spending that money. You go on three holidays a year or something. That becomes your normal.
But for a lot of people, you're rich. Three holidays a year. Oddly, the car stuff never really lands with me. But three holidays a year, you're rich. What word do we prefer? What word would you accept?
Comfortable and well off, I think, would be...
What's the difference?
Well, because I think if you're comfortable, you're not worrying about money every day like the people you're saying that maybe aren't earning as much. You're not worrying about it every day. But you are still making specific choices about what you can do and what you can't do. And so I don't think it's a way that it sounds like if you're rich. When I think of rich, I think of people who don't have to think about what they spend. I think of the Jeff Bezoses and the Musks and...
Really? You know, for you, rich means literally the richest people in the world?
Not necessarily the richest
people.
Well, they're
the ones you just went for.
I know, because they're the first ones that came into my head. Okay. It's a bad example, but they're people who have earned enough money to be able to go to any restaurant and just, I don't care what I'm spending. Or, they're going on a holiday and they think, I'd like to go to Alaska.
But this is why it's coming close to being meaningless then, because there'll be people listening to this who have absolutely no desire whatsoever to do any of the things that you and I might associate with wealth or richness. And because they don't have that desire, they're not missing anything. So they feel richer than you are because they don't want to go on three holidays a year or upgrade their car or live in a bigger house. They are genuinely content, and they are at risk of turning into a greetings card, a Hallmark card or a T-shirt slogan. They are the richest people of all.
Well, 100%, yeah. And actually, I'm very frugal, so, I want to retire, so I want to make sure my money goes into the right pot. So I don't do a lot of the things I've talked about, but I know that people who have known me over the years think that, oh, he's got a lot of money. Well, actually, I save as much of my money because I want to retire.
I want to work less, and that is the proof of the pudding that we opened in the first bit of the program. When if you can give up the work and continue to live as you're living when you're working, then you've made it. For me, you're rich, oddly, but...
I agree there.
Right, the last bit.
If you have enough money to give up work early... And even if you're not living an extremely rich life or at the same standard you were when you were working, you're living a rich life. That's richer than the example.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll give you that.
I believe.
No, of course it is. And that's why, I nearly said that's why they invented heaven, so that everybody who is not living that kind of life is... hypnotized by the promise that they will be living in paradise one day, so they'll put up with all sorts of earthly privations in the meantime, because of course the rich man in his castle, the poor man at his gate, God made them high and lowly and ordered their estate. Thank you, Martin. I like it. I think that what we might conclude at the end of this hour is that it is one of the most meaningless words in the English language, rich, unless you're talking about cake. Adam's in Glasgow. Adam, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Pleasure to speak to you.
Likewise.
I think for myself, and I sort of see two ends of this because I was on a high salary of that calibre few years ago, and I've just turned 50 now, and I took a totally different career change. But I suppose for me, when I was earning that money, I didn't feel rich because of the direct debits and all the sort of expectations that you have around the people you work and relate to. And I totally relate to last call. I was one of those people who had three holidays a year and did a lot of things. And now I see people who are earning that money and I don't. I think a lot of it is down to a bit of a throwaway society we have, where we are quite materialistic. And I know plenty of people will have a new kitchen every 5 years. And I know that at the other end of the scale, there's people who would dream of even having a functional kitchen in the house we live in. Or a new fridge.
Yeah.
So I suppose for me, the take on it would be, when I was earning that, I didn't feel rich, but now I'm not earning that and I've changed my lifestyle and my finances. I look back now and think, that was a nice place to be. However, I don't feel that a lot has changed for me in the respect
really?
Of feeling rich wholesomely.
Do your expectations have your expectations recalibrated? Okay.
100%.
Here's a tricky question. What do you miss most about having a higher income?
Probably what you said before about that prestige bit, about that sort of the position you hold and the people, actually the actual money side of it.
Really?
And also knowing, and also because I don't sleep any. In fact, last night I had the best sleep ever, and when I was earning that, I didn't sleep well at all. But that is so true.
I believe
but,
you'd be a very odd thing to make up on the radio. I had a cracking night's sleep last night.
But my perception is that basically that when I was earning that, I had all the material things I was able to afford then, but now I've got a different take on it in that I have more quality time, so I feel richer in that sense. But yes,
you wouldn't have felt rich. Do you think now that someone on 125 grand is rich?
I think that's a really good question, and I think now looking, but equally, and I think again, your previous caller alluded to depending on where you live as well can make a massive difference to how rich you
feel.
That's
got to be true. I mean, there's a north south gap here, isn't there? The size of, you wouldn't believe. Not, obviously, city, non city, urban, rural, those things matter as well. And some areas are very salubrious and therefore expensive. But generally speaking, you can map income disparities across the country. And therefore, you might be on a higher income, but you're in a part of the country where most obviously property is much more expensive. So that doesn't mean that you're rich. Whereas if you were on that income in one of the poorest parts of the country, you would be technically rich despite having exactly the same income, and then you'd move. And that's the really interesting bit. Then you'd move. It's why John Deacon, the Queen bass player, is so interesting, because we all did it used to be like this. Were our parents like this? When did it start, this notion of socio-economic aspiration, the idea of wanting to be on a rung higher than your parents, rather than getting a house, sitting tight, and banking as much money as you possibly can. Not unlike Martin. When did it happen? Is it conspicuous consumption or is it socioeconomic aspiration? They're not the same thing. I think sometimes we use conspicuous consumption to pretend that we are meeting our socioeconomic aspirations. Now, people who've got a fancy car on tick, who really shouldn't be driving that fancy car, but they're doing it on tick. They can just about hold it together with the monthly payments, and they present to the world an image of success that is slightly at odds with the reality, but they love that. When did that start happening? I don't know. Because I went to private school, and I was my family were far from the wealthiest in the, most obviously, the car park, actually. So Dad's company car was a Morris Marina. Latterly a Morris Itau, but I'd have mates whose dads drove Range Rovers with personalised number plates, or Jaguars and things like that. That's probably the first time I felt it as a kid. You know, someone's dad, I had a neighbour growing up, I had a Ferrari in the garage, would you believe? So those things, but I've got no idea whether they were actually earning more or less than my dad. They just chose to spend the money on different things. A funny one. I don't know. What does rich mean? Spoiler alert, quite possibly nothing. It's 11:33. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Reform UK's Nigel Farage says his party would rhetorically agree with the Home Secretary's plans to overhaul the asylum system. At a press conference this morning, he joked that Shabana Mahmood, who's facing backlash from some Labour MPs, would be the next defector to reform. Official figures show net migration to the UK in 2024 was lower than previously thought. The Office for National Statistics has revised the figure to 345,000, down from 431,000. And analysts have predicted that annual energy bills for typical households will fall slightly from January. The consultancy firm Cornwall Insight says Ofgem's energy price cap will dip by 1%. That's a £22 drop for the average consumer. LBC weather, a cold but dry day for many. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:36. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And once again, I told you so, those immigration figures plummeting at a rate of knots for two reasons. Number one, the country post-Brexit is a considerably less pleasant place to live, and it's getting worse. And number two, that means people are less likely to come here. So we British nationals are more likely to leave if we can, because of course 52% of the electorate voted to abolish their own freedom of movement, and Priti Patel and Nigel Farage told you to celebrate that. And and people coming in are coming to a much less attractive offer, which is partly why we're probably 17th on the asylum seeker chart. I'm just referring back to something that you just heard in the news bulletin with the immigration figures for the last year. Revised downwards. The number of British nationals returning has been revised upwards. So these things are not cast in stone. About 143,000 people came back to this country, but the overall figures are coming down fast, and it won't matter. It won't matter a jot, unless people really do have legitimate concerns, end quote, and aren't simply dancing to the racist dog whistles of various political and media figures. And we'll find out before the next election, actually. On we go, back to the rather more comforting territory of how could you not be rich if you've got £1 million in the bank? Answer, because I know someone with 2 million. Is it that simple? I know someone with 10 million. And how much of this is making you despair for the species? Because I am simultaneously despairing for the species and completely guilty of all the things that we're describing. Apart from the cars. And I guess the holidays, less so. But I love a nice house. Why? How many rooms can you use at the time? We were in Sussex at the weekend. And is it one of the houses that was linked to Virginia Woolf, to the Bloomsbury set, is famous for having 52 rooms, one for every week of the year. And you sort of thought, well, if you were going to do that, if you were going to decamp from one room to another every week of the year, then you'd need 52 rooms. But why on earth would you need 52 rooms? Do you know the story of the yachts? You know the story of the yachts and the therapist. Do you know this story? It's a great story. I don't know where I got it from, so I hope there's no copyright issues involved or plagiarism allegations about to come in. But I'll take some more calls first, and then I will tell you the tale of the yacht. Debbie is in Rochdale. Debbie, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, hiya. I was Hello. Really interested in the last conversation, really. I've recently retired this year, early retirement. I used to earn about $145,000 a year. I'd worked really hard to get in that job lots of reasons. My dad died quite young and I just wanted him to make him proud and be something. And so I really, really, I used to work, I don't know, I was contracted for 36 hours and I worked for 60 hours a week. I just belted it, really. But there were sacrifices, you know, I missed children's things at school. I look back in shame now, about 15 years ago, my husband was in intensive care unit. He was very poorly. And I was still working. I was still doing, catching up with everything at night and plowing on. Anyway, I had a bit of a revelation last year and I thought, what am I doing?
What happened?
What am I doing? To be honest with you, James, it was menopause.
Yes.
It was a number of things and I just thought, I'm just working myself into an early grave. Close friends and people
What tipped it? The menopause notwithstanding. Describe the moment when you realised this. I know it was probably incremental, but when the seesaw started tipping the other way, if you like.
I'll try and say it without swearing, but I was sat in work and I was listening to just rubbish.
Yeah.
Just rubbish. And I thought, why is this important in my life? Why am I listening to these people? What am I doing?
Well, after decades of doing it, that's just that one day, the planets aligned and you thought, well, stuff this for a game of soldiers.
It happened overnight and I went in the next day and I said, can I have a severance? I don't come from a rich family, but obviously on that salary, I picked up the bills, I picked up the Christmas parties, I picked up the taxes, I picked up the Christmas drink. So I was spending, we had two cars and I never had an expensive mortgage. My mortgage has never cost me more than £600 or £700 a month. I've always had a cheapish house. But there was always an expectation that I picked up these things. And that was fine because my sister was a dinner lady, my brother had a manual job. So, and I was so honoured to be able to do it.
Were you rich? Did you think you were rich? I mean, they probably thought you were rich. Did you think you were rich?
I thought I was in a very privileged position to be able to take my mum and my sisters and my aunties and everybody out and say, I'm getting this.
Yeah.
And I took them to lovely places. I paid for my children to go on lovely holidays and things like that. But I tell you now, James, I'm richer now than I've ever been. I am now on £40,000 a year. My husband is alive and well. We go for walks. We go for dog walks. I'm calmer. I get to see my mum. I get to see my sister. That 60, 70 hours a week has now been replaced with autumn walks alongside a canal. I now save more money, James, than I ever did when I was working.
How come?
Because we went down to one car. We're in a very affordable house. We watch the heating. We watch the eating bills. We're not mean with it, but we're just very sensible
Do you miss anything? Do you miss anything?
I don't miss a thing. The only thing is... I did get a severance payment. I gave half of it to my sister. She's a dinner lady.
Blimey.
Because I just... I'm from a very good family that have supported me. And I thought, I've got to give this to my sister because without my sister, supporting me, helping me pick my children up from school, I wouldn't have been able to have the job that I have.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So I recognised, look, I'm in this good position because my sister helped me. It's time to pay back. And I think
you're describing a different dimension to this conversation. I'm really glad you have, because you didn't, looking back, the trade-off wasn't working for you. And if someone had told you that 10 years ago, you'd have bitten their head off, or you'd have thought they were crackers. But it wasn't actually worth it. It wasn't worth it.
I did love going to work.
Until you didn't.
Until I didn't. And then I just had this dawning realisation of, I'm a hostage to the salary every month. I'm a hostage to this amount that's got to go in every month.
Yeah.
And then I realised, actually, my family will benefit more
hostage.
At this time.
That's the word. That's the word.
You'll benefit. My mum benefits. She's had a knee replacement. She's not been well. She's 77.
Mm.
She's going to benefit me more the next 5 years of me being with her on £40,000 a year than working 67 hours a week on 140.
Every hour is a memory, isn't it? Every minute is a memory. I love that. That's the word. Yeah. That word hostage, because you could be on £1.5 million a year, but you've got three houses, and you know, we used to say sometimes that I didn't, because I was never going to go down this road. But when I was in my final year at the London School of Economics, and some of the lads and some of the young women as well were going off to these big jobs in the city, you know, like Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and that kind of thing, and they, quite a few of them were adamant that they were only going to do it for X number of years, make a pot of money and then get out. Spoiler alert, none of them did. And the joke they used to make was, I'm not going to be working 70 hours a week to subsidise my wife's affair with her tennis coach.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether any of them ended up married to women who were having affairs with their tennis coaches, but none of them got out. And that's so the word hostage can apply to people
you
who are masters of the universe, self-described masters of the universe.
And mine became about, I was so able to treat all my family all the time.
Which
I loved
is nice.
Them so much. And I was able to just buy things that were such amazing to them.
Yeah.
But in a way, I can still do it. I can still take them out for lunch. I can still do it. And it's just because, you know what, I'm not saying, I've only got 30 minutes and then I've got to get back.
Wow.
Now,
and I bet they prefer it.
Cheaper lunch.
Well, of course, but more of you. And that's better for them as well. It's better for everyone. We do it with the kids sometimes as well.
Yeah.
Like, if you do, you know, one of mine is away at university. And, I'm pretty sure she'd rather have a visit than 100 quid chucked in her bank account. Well, actually, maybe with 19-year-olds, that's a bit rose tinted, isn't it?
Kidding yourself. There.
Yeah, all right, then. Not her, but my mum.
Your mum. Yeah, it's lovely.
Oh, you're lovely.
No,
you are.
It's life is so. I didn't think the husband would live.
Oh,
crikey. He's a bit older than me.
Yeah,
and I just think, if I'd have not had this, hope, please God, this last 5 years with him, and I was still working and earning that money, the realisation that I've had not earning that money in the last year has made me realise how unimportant it was. Now, I'm not kidding myself.
No, I get it.
To the dinner lady on £12,000 a year, the struggle is real.
Of course it is. No one's pretending it isn't.
I know.
And she works very, very hard as well. Yes. I know when you said of course.
Oh, gosh, a job. And I know at £40,000 a year, I'm still probably considered by many to be a high earner. You know, the people will be saying, she's kidding herself. I wish I was on £40,000 a year. But what I'm trying to explain is that the difference between that 145 and that 140 has been getting a life back.
And that's why the word rich is meaningless or impossible to pin down, because you're much richer now than you were then, even though your income has gone down by a third, less than a third, more than a third. Not very good at maths. Couldn't have done your job. Thank you, Debbie. A lot of love coming in for you. And I would like to add my voice to all of the people who are saying very simply and very straightforwardly, what a lovely lady. There is, however, Debbie, I don't know if you're aware of this, there's a tradition on this programme. Did you grow up in Rochdale?
I did.
All right, well, I have to ask you this question, because I ask everybody from Rochdale this question, and the answer is almost always yes, and it freaks people out because of my own life and background, not really putting me in a position where I should even know. Did you go to Alder Hill?
I didn't.
Oh, flipping heck. But I bet you know people that did.
I did, but I didn't.
Fair enough.
Can I just give a shout out for the beautiful new Rochdale Town Hall that's been refurbished?
Well, yes.
If anybody gets a chance to visit, it is the most beautiful building worth visiting, bang in the middle of Rochdale. It's gorgeous.
Well, I'll see you. I'll see your Rochdale Town Hall refurbishment, and I'll raise you the Kidderminster Town Hall refurbishment that has literally just reopened in the last few weeks and now has a very nice cafe.
Oh,
have you got a cafe?
As well.
Have you? Oh, well, cafe for cafe. Well,
that took me mum.
Two new town halls refurbished. There you go. One in Rochdale, one in Kidderminster. What a time to be alive. 11:48 is the time. What a lovely lady. Thank you, Debbie.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Don't know about you, but the more I see of her and the more I hear from her, the more I warm to Shabana Mahmood.
I wish I had the privilege of walking around this country and not seeing the division that the issue of migration and asylum system is creating across this country. Unlike him, unfortunately, I am the one that is regularly told to go back home.
Is it that bad out there? Dilip is in Leicester. You're on the radio.
An Indian came to England in 71 from Uganda with a British passport. Got quite a big social media page. I often get abuse on there. My daughter works in criminal defence law. She gets it very regularly.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Hurry! Extra savings in Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale end soon. Until the 2nd of December, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind. Don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour, same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll. The cafe bar's in coach G if you fancy a brew, or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Waitrose presents 3 for 2 on chilled party food.
Kelly, meet everyone.
Hi, nice to meet you.
8 guests, one host who knows exactly what will bring them together.
Food's ready.
Starring number one king prawn toasts with crispy sesame seeds, soft polar bear bao buns bursting with hoisin veg filling and meltingly tender Wagyu beef mini pies.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines of stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and concessions. Cheapest item free.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 11:52. I know it's a bit of a drum for me, but it's better than being the opposite, isn't it? It's better than trying to make your mum frightened of foreigners. Imagine if the news today was that the net migration figures for last year turned out to be 20% higher than previously thought. Just genuinely, I could be wrong. Maybe it would get exactly the same level of attention. And so tomorrow's newspapers, 20% higher than previously thought. Tomorrow's newspapers, 20% lower than previously thought. Do you think, given that the statistical change is identical, do you think the tone and scale of the coverage would be the same? I'm not going to answer that question. I just want you to. And if you've just answered no, of course it wouldn't be the same, James, I want you to wonder why not. So net migration to the UK last year was 20% lower than previously thought, and it's plummeting on previous years already, and it's continuing to move in the downwards direction, which hardly anyone except me is going to tell you on a regular basis. Would the media response to that story be the same if the movement was identical in size but in the opposite direction? No? Why not? Because that, in many ways, is the same answer that you would give if I'd asked you the question I nearly asked you today, which is, why does the small boat stuff land so hard with people who are not remotely affected by it? Not quite the same answer, but if net migration to the UK last year had just been found to be 20% higher than previously thought, do you think it would be reported differently from the discovery that it's 20% lower? And if so, then why? I'll just leave that hanging. Quick story. I'll give you the curtailed version. I can't remember who told me this or who tells this story on stage, but you've got a therapist in New York, right? And she's got two clients who are among the biggest tycoons in New York or L.A., but they're rivals. Let's say L.A., because they're Hollywood moguls. You've got two Hollywood moguls, and they both go to the therapist, and they've both got very aspirational wives. Apologies for the kind of low-level misogyny attached to that cliche, but that's the way the story was told to me. But they're also very competitive themselves. And one of them has a fantastic result. One of them has a magnificent year. And so he buys a yacht. And he is absolutely loving his yacht. His wife is absolutely loving the yacht. And they do enjoy rubbing the faces of their friends, stroke rivals, frenemies, if you prefer, in the yacht. Hey, we got a yacht now. Have you got it? You should really get a yacht. Yachts are great. We love yachts. And it's quite a big yacht. But the next year, the other fella makes a killing. And he has one specification for his yacht that he commissions immediately upon realizing what an amazing year he's had. And the specification is that it has to be bigger than the other yacht. That's the only specification that he really cares about. His wife's in charge of everything else. Decor, I don't know, helicopter pads, you name it. But all they both agree on is that the yacht has to be bigger than their friend's yacht. And they both tell these stories to the therapist. So it begins with the first guy going, we got this yacht, and we really stuck it to the other guy. And then the other guy comes in and goes, oh, I'm having a terrible time. My wife's really having a go at me. Our friends bought a yacht and we can't. Oh, dear. And the therapist says to the second guy who comes back and goes, everything is great. Life is fantastic. We've got a yacht and it's bigger than his. And she says, what happens when he gets a bigger yacht? I don't want to think about that. I don't want to think about that. And she says, I've got something that neither of you will ever have. And he goes, no, you don't. Come off it. What do you got? What do you make? Say, $250 a year? You got nothing that I want. What do you got that I haven't got? I could buy and sell this building five times over. He was Welsh, this American tycoon. Accent fans. And she says, I've got enough. Now, it would be as hard to pin down what enough means in material, measurable terms as it would be to pin down what rich means. But there it is. She's got enough. They'll never have enough. I don't know why I like stories like that, but I do. Stephanie's in Haddenham in Cambridgeshire. Stephen is. I beg your pardon. I just changed your gender. I do apologise. Stephen, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi. I had a story I thought you might be interested in. So you probably tell by my accent, from the northeast of England. So yes. I grew up in a pit village in County Durham with a really rough comprehensive school. I think it's closed now.
Right.
Very few of us did A-levels at sixth form. Even fewer went to university. And I was one of the ones who sort of left the area. And I worked down in Sandwich in Kent for a big pharma company. So to my friends back home, I'm considered a millionaire relative to them. But I'm nowhere near. I'm not. And for me being rich, it's about the mortgage. So for me, the mortgage is like the chain around Marley's ghost. I think about it all the time.
Do you?
It keeps me awake at night.
Because if you lost your job, that would then just destroy you.
Yeah. And if anyone has paid off their mortgage, if they're lucky enough to own a house with no mortgage, well, they've won. It's like the lady in your story there. They've got enough. You know, they're rich. But there are two sort of ways of working, aren't there? There's the, if you work for an employer, PAYE, yeah. Are you comfortable in your job? Is it a secure role? Are there no sort of red flags or bells ringing for cuts? And have you been there long enough such that if you were made redundant, do you have enough to keep you going?
I like the word winning. Winning just sort of qualifies enough and rich, doesn't it, in some ways?
Yeah. And then the other way of working is how I do it, through a limited company, or you work for yourself, a sole trader, partnership, whatever. And then you have to make sure that you're selling enough stuff, whether it's a product or a service. So that's what I do. And I'm constantly worrying, is my contract going to be renewed? Am I going to sell enough hours to the clients next year? And you have to budget accordingly.
Some people would be in the same position as you and worry less. So again, everything's variable in this space, isn't it? And some people would say, well, live in a smaller house, have a smaller mortgage, and then you'd sleep better. But we don't work like that as human beings.
No, and, you know, a smaller mortgage is still a mortgage, isn't it?
You cut
your cloth accordingly. So for me, being rich is to have that feel of comfort that, you know, a few years down the time, you'll be fine. A few years down the line, sorry, you'll be fine. If you're approaching pension age, is there enough in your pension? When do you retire? How long are you going to live? Will your pension be enough to keep you going? So for me, it's those thoughts that would define
And some
rich.
People never, ever think about that stuff. Some people really are happy-go-lucky.
Yeah, particularly when you're young. I've got friends up north who, you know, they say, oh, I haven't got a pension, I haven't got any savings. And I sort of say, well,
and that sends shivers down your spine.
Yeah, totally. I've just got a sort of different mindset. One of my friends says, we'll deal with it if it comes up.
Jarvis Cocker sings about it on the new Pulp album. It came to him later rather than earlier in life, but he addresses some of these points. I mean, more about aging and the relationship that your maturity has with your financial security. But it is, I mean, if we've learned anything this hour, it's that we've learned nothing. I don't mean that in a glib fashion, but it is everybody's variable. Some people could be in exactly the same position as Stephen and be doing a lap of honour on the way home every night because they can't believe how far they've come from where they've started. Other people, like Stephen, will be lying awake at night worrying about losing it all. Oh, I think it's called tramp angst. That's when I first came across it. And it is something you either have or you don't have. Martin Amis, I think, was the writer who introduced me to the idea. And it doesn't matter how much you've got. You live in fear of waking up on a park bench one day. You'll just lose it all. You'll mess it up. It's a psychological condition. I imagine you can sort of train your way or therapize your way out of it. But some people think that's the daftest thing they've ever heard. And other people just go, oh, yeah, that's me. That's me. A lot of love for Rochdale Town Hall coming in now, where I'm told, this is just people trying to make Kidderminster Town Hall feel bad. Apparently Jay Rayner, the doyen of restaurant critics, well, one of the doyens of restaurant critics, I'm also a big fan of Giles Corran and Grace Dent, but they've got a restaurant that was given high praise by Jay Rayner, Andy tells me, whereas Martin tells me that Rochdale Town Hall features regularly in Don Estelle's self-published autobiography, Sing Lofty, in which he never stops talking about how lovely it has got an amazing ceiling. And that's from before the refurbishment. I don't know what it's like now. Martin tells us that we never find out the name of Don's first wife in his self-published autobiography, but his love for Rochdale Town Hall shines through on every page. It's 12:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Reform UK's Nigel Farage says his party would rhetorically agree with the Home Secretary's plans to radicalise and change the asylum system. Shabana Mahmood is under pressure from some Labour MPs who are threatening to block the changes unless she makes a U-turn. The changes include fast-tracking deportations and limits on appeals. Speaking at a press conference this morning, Mr Farage claimed that his party is setting the pace for government policy.
Despite her protestations, I thought a lot of what Shabana Mahmood said yesterday was driven directly by fear that Labour are losing votes, particularly in the Red Wall, to reform. And rhetorically, we would agree with a lot of what the Home Secretary said. Indeed, there are some of us that thought it might just be a pitch. Maybe that's our next defector, I'm not sure. If her backbenchers vote against her, that could become a bigger likelihood.
Official figures show net migration to the UK in 2024 was lower than previously thought. The Office for National Statistics has revised its figures to 345,000, down from 431,000.
The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has promised to reinstate the two-child benefit cap if it's scrapped by the Labour government.
The cap makes sure people on benefits have to make the same decisions about having children as everyone else. This is fairness. But this is not the kind of fairness that Labour believe in.
Mrs. Badenoch says removing the limit would add £3.5 billion to the welfare bill. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, is expected to lift the cap in next week's budget as part of efforts to tackle child poverty. Labour claims Tory plans for £47 billion worth of cuts would drain money out of hospitals, schools and policing. Analysts have predicted that annual energy bills for typical households will fall slightly from January. The consultancy firm Cornwall Insight says Ofgem's energy price cap will dip by 1%. That's the equivalent of a £22 drop for the average consumer in England, Scotland and Wales. And Norwich have appointed the former Rangers boss Philippe Clement as their new head coach. The Belgian coach has been out of work since leaving Rangers in February. Norwich sacked Liam Manning after a run of 7 defeats in 8 Championship League games. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 121 at 95.53. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, a cold but dry afternoon for many. Some outbreaks of rain possible in northwestern and southeastern areas with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
We had our smart meter installed a year ago, and it's made things so much easier. Not having to submit meter readings or having to deal with estimated bills is great.
A smart meter sends meter readings direct to your energy supplier. It means you get accurate bills, not estimated bills, and you don't even need an internet connection. Call your energy supplier to request a smart meter today.
Real testimonials voiced by actors. Eligibility may vary.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 5 minutes after 12 and you're listening. Oh, good afternoon even. Well, it's the morning somewhere, but it's afternoon here. 5 minutes after 12. And I'm going to do one of those things in a minute where I'm going to take two stories and seek to sell them to you as the same story before inviting your responses. But I've got a rather splendid missing word round for you first. Given that it appears we can barely carry a news bulletin without putting them one of them in it. Here's another headline featuring Reform UK. Reform Council repaints road markings for school which blank. Well, actually, technically, blank, blank, blank. So what are the missing words in this headline? Reform Council. Remember that we can judge perfectly how well Reform might run the country by looking at how well they're running councils. I like to keep you up to date with developments in that sphere, given that it's one of the few things upon which we can all agree. Reform Council repaints road markings for school which blank, blank, blank. What do you think? What do you think? Do you want to have a go filling the blanks? Reform Council repaints road markings for school which blank, blank, blank. And I will hopefully remember to share that with you before the end of the hour. I've got another story linked to those clowns as well, which even by their standards, it's pretty disgusting to go after special needs children. But I told you they were going to, and today they have. But the stories that I want to knit together, I think they work really well next to each other. But at first glance, you might not agree. I think... And it ties in a little bit with that lovely call from Rochdale. What was that lovely lady called in Rochdale? What was that? Was it Julie? Debbie? That notion of authenticity or the real you. Thinking that the real you is the person putting in a 60-hour week and treating your family to various things and paying prices, like not being there as much as you might have wanted to be when your husband was taken ill. That's the real me. That's the real Debbie. But actually, that wasn't the real Debbie. The real Debbie is on a fraction of that income and making completely different life choices and therefore feels much happier. Who is the real you? Who is the real you? And why aren't you the real you? You can't answer either of those questions unless you've come out the other side. And there are two stories in the news today about people who've come out the other side. One is about women and one is about men. And I think they describe almost identical journeys, albeit on rather less, perhaps, serious stakes. So one in three middle-aged women divorcees say they are much happier after they split from their ex-husbands. You'd possibly hope the figure would be higher, but remember, this is saying much happier, and there'll be various stages of ambivalence and mildly happy. But many of them, with decades of healthy life still ahead, speak of the relief and excitement that they felt after the divorce. Survation have undertaken this polling, and they said many spoke about finally having a chance to become the women they always wanted to be. This sense of moving into a better next chapter was often heady and exciting. One woman, identified only as Pat, aged 55, said she hit rock bottom after having an affair, but she's since come into her own post-divorce. I want other women, she said, to know that my rebirth, my return to my true self post-divorce, has been an amazing experience. I am now so much happier. I want to know how you've changed. Because I talked in the last hour. I don't know why I've woken up this morning fascinated by this stuff, but I have, and here we are. Here I am now, straining to make you as interested in the stuff I'm interested in, despite the fact that it's not going to be appearing on any front pages anytime soon, as I currently am. But do you remember in the last hour when I said to you, can you train yourself to feel differently about things? Can you, you know, almost become a better person or become a more rounded person? If you can train yourself to care less about material trinkets or material possessions that you don't need, but you think you really want, you train yourself to want them less, you will be happier, won't you? And almost by definition, I think that's why Debbie's Call touched so many people. You don't care as much about those things. Therefore, I mean, in a way, if the last fella could train himself to care less about is that, well, I don't know, can you really, is it healthy, is it responsible to care less about your financial security? That way perhaps penury and bankruptcy lies. But you understand what I mean. A good therapist would help you, or even a hypnotherapist would help you to get things in perspective. I'm worrying endlessly about something that I don't want to worry about. I know that I need to worry about it a bit, but it's impacting my mental health. It's keeping me awake at night. You must be able to change. We know that you can change. So I find change, personal transformation, absolutely fascinating. Of all the sort of subjects that are not necessarily hard news that we discuss together, change is the thing that fascinates me most, and not just because I'm a massive David Bowie fan. And so that's the story about women, looking at divorce, allowing you to become your true self. And listen, I'm not drawing a big black line between these two stories. Obviously, many men will feel that they've only become their true selves, or they were only able to become their authentic selves after divorce, after getting out of their marriage. But I want that bit of the conversation to be about women, because that's what the research is into, and how divorce changed you to your own surprise, almost what you discovered about yourself, which maybe had been there before, but marriage had somehow, or society's, in either marriage per se, or society's requirements of marriage. There's a hideous article in the Telegraph. I know that's dog bites man territory, but there was a particularly hideous article in the Telegraph the other day about somebody bemoaning his wife's lower social status. And I mean, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that it was largely made up. But one of the reasons why he attacks his wife, I'll read you the paragraph. Despite having a full-time job, just like her mother, my wife spends much of her precious free time cleaning our suburban home, when I'd rather be out on the town, at art galleries or concerts, or poring over the weekend newspapers. I'll tell you what, pal, help her clean the home, or pay for a cleaning lady, and take her to an art gallery next weekend. There you go, job done, checks in the post, marriage guidance available between 10 and 1 every day on LBC. It's a hideous article, under the headline, Marriage Diaries, I Married Beneath Me. Even by the unhinged headline standards of the Daily Telegraph, that's an ugly one. And I know it will apply to men as well, but I'm interested in how you particularly if you're a little bit older than me, then marriage kind of came with a set of instructions, didn't it? That line there from that hideous article about approaching marriage, even though you had a full-time job and your mum didn't, you would still shoulder the massive burden domestically. You'd still shoulder the massive majority of the domestic burden. I think that's probably still true in most households, regardless of your age. But men are getting better. Just because your man might not be doesn't mean that the rest of us aren't trying, or a lot of us are getting a lot better. If you both work, then you have to train yourself not to step over piles of clothes at the bottom of the stairs or leave unironed baskets next to the ironing board. You can do it yourself, all of these things. But marriage for women of a certain generation came with a set of expectations and instructions that were built and assembled in a completely different era when you weren't going to work. So that would be your mum's era, perhaps. So divorce, I'm going to be a little bit soppy now. Divorce set you free, right? Just tell me how it changed you, the divorce. 0345 606 0973. And then we come to the men, and this is research, not from pollsters, but from Samaritans, where men reveal that if it wasn't for social judgment, and by that, you'd be tempted to say of other men, but I don't think it is just other men. I think women are sometimes responsible for imposing expectations of masculinity on men. But men would live very different lives if they weren't so frightened of being judged. And the things... You can snigger now. The more insecure you are about your own masculinity, I would suggest the more likely you are to snigger now. The more likely you are to scoff. I can usually tell from my inbox when men have very fragile self-image, very fragile ideas of their own masculinity. They're usually the men that are, well, they might flirt with homophobia, or make sort of really odd homoerotic comments about Sadiq Khan and me when he comes into the studio. These are men who are sort of terrified about what they might find if they ever dug into their own psyche properly or their own masculinity. And those men are the ones most likely to snigger at what I'm about to say. Someone who is built like Jack Reacher, or if you don't read Lee Child novels, built like the proverbial brick outhouse, but is completely comfortable in their own skin, is going to nod sagely at what I'm about to say. Somebody who is terrified of their own shadow is going to snigger. Are you ready? Have I built it up too much? The majority of men would sing, paint, and dance more freely if they were unrestrained from social judgment. This is really important because it is tied to suicide statistics. 3/4 of deaths in 2023 by suicide were among males, and that will be partly a consequence of repression and an inability to articulate your feelings, a form of emotional constipation, if you like. And it's heartbreaking to see, and you've probably seen it in someone you love. You probably know, you may know that you're suffering from it yourself. I'm not happy, but I can't tell anyone. And, of course, you don't necessarily have to tell anyone. It would be equally beneficial to do things that just make you happy for reasons that you're not going to be able to properly work out. A great friend of mine sings. Changed his life. Joined a choir. We didn't snigger. We just had no idea he was interested in singing. Been in the choir at school, it turned out, and he had memories of being transported emotionally by singing. He's not the best singer in the choir, but he absolutely loves it. His wife will tell you he has visibly changed, not just internally, but he has visibly changed. He walks a bit taller, less angry at home, better with the kids. Just goes once or twice a week, twice if there's a performance, once if it's just rehearsals. Been to see him. I'd love to do it myself, but I really, really can't sing. But you know that soul-soaring sensation that you get from singing. But the massive majority of men, even if, as I say those words, they found themselves thinking, yeah, do you know what? I loved singing at school and I haven't done it since. I'd really like to sing. Karaoke or something. I'm not going to do karaoke down the local because everyone would, I'd get lynched by the lads. Hey, if someone listening to this now is thinking, I love singing, I do. I love singing, but I'm never going to do it. Why not? Samaritans know why not. Because you're frightened of social judgment. You are restrained by social judgment. The other things we do is fake interest in sport, exaggerate how much alcohol we drink, and, as I said, fight shy of doing things that we kind of know we'd love to do, but we won't do them because we're frightened of what other people might say. Dancing, singing, painting. I'm going to add acting to that because that's my thing, and I've only recently kind of formed a desire to do it again. Not for attention or for any of that kind of malarkey or to indulge my show-off gene. Don't even care whether there's an audience or not. I want to go to classes. I want to go to acting classes and do the things I loved doing when I was a kid. What I want, the producer has just very helpfully pointed out that my show-off gene is probably indulged enough already, thank you very much. That's the kind of teamwork and support. Those are the kind of social constraints that stop me from being my authentic self on the radio. So, oddly, and this is just the way the stories have fallen, and we don't need to read too much into it, but women discover their true selves when they get divorced, and men would discover their true selves if they could move through social judgment and embrace things like singing, painting and dancing. And that's what I want you to talk to me about for the rest of the programme. So, ladies, all the single ladies, or rather all the divorced ladies, how did it change you? What did you discover almost about yourself? And I've just realised I've been a bit guilty of this myself. Well, no, I haven't. Because I don't think that... What is it? Do you think I have been guilty of this? No, because that quote that we teased Steve Hardman and Brexit Baker about, he'd probably be happier if he was doing some singing, some dancing and some painting. But because of social constraints, he says, motorbike riding, hang gliding and fast catamaran sailing. Because that's manly. That's what he thinks men do. I don't know. Let's not spoil his day by bringing him into this. It must be tough enough being him at the moment, as it is. And I say that with concern and kindness. How did it change you? Like, actually biting the bullet. Doing the thing that the lads, for want of a better word, would tease you for. Because you're never going to get away from banter. The lads are always going to tease. You're always going to get mocked. It's how men communicate with each other. And you two things can be true at the same time. You can have the banter, but you can also break through it and do the thing that somehow, I don't know what it does. It frees you. Tell me the difference it's made when you actually did, a little bit later in life perhaps, when you actually did the thing that's not considered to be very macho. You did it because you really, really wanted to. And you know that it's made every single aspect of your existence better. What was it? And what did it change? So for the ladies, divorce. And you have been amazed post-divorce to discover who you really are. You didn't actually know or remember who you really are. What did it do? Describe it to people. I don't want to encourage divorce, but I want to encourage post-divorce self-realization. So ladies, divorce set you free. Men, non-traditional masculine pastimes. The thing you didn't do because you thought it was a bit girly, right? You didn't do it because you thought it was a bit girly, and then you did it. Give me a call and tell me what changed. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. 22 minutes after 12 is the time. Men would live more freely if they weren't judged by society. Headline number one. Why women who divorce in midlife say they now feel reborn. Headline number two. If those headlines are about you, I want to hear your story.
LBC.
Amazon Black Friday week deals up to 40% off. Get the perfect gift for your father-in-law. The Deal Hunter. If only he knew about the deal you got on his gift, he would embrace you, just like he does deals. Oh, I guess we're hugging now. Well, that's a long hug. Are you still going? Oh, it's a Black Friday week hug. It's a deal hug. Up to 40% off this Amazon Black Friday week. Starts Thursday.
In 2024, a hangry fan posted, "Why do other countries have better McDonald's menus than ours?" So,
We went abroad and heisted some worldwide favourites. The World Menu Heist. 9 of the most wanted McDonald's menu items from around the world. Now in the UK.
Until 25th of November from 11am, please apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Quaker is an official sponsor of Team GB. And rightly so. After all, the rowing team's motto is Oats Move Boats. But why stop there? Team GB, if you're listening, try these on for size. Quaker sachets move Bob sleighs. Ugly bowl, forward roll. One for the gymnasts. The world's your stage when you eat some beige. Maybe just stick to Oats Move Boats. Quaker. Deliciously real, deliciously ugly. Sponsor of Team GB.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
23 minutes after 12. And I'm a bit... I'm a creature of my upbringing as well. So I find stories about men embracing non-masculine hobbies, I think they become more... Well, for me at least, they become more charming the more blokish you are. So the more obvious... So what you're really looking for is a 6'6" squaddy who loves crochet. Do you see what I mean? Or a 6'6" squaddy who loves ballet. It's why Billy Elliot's such a brilliant film, because of the backdrop, because of the context, because of the setting. But this got me in the feels from Gary from Southend. I stopped doing one of the things I loved, dancing, at a young age due to bullying, James. That's it. That's the story. Later in life, getting into music again and attending gigs with new friends, it all came back again, although still not in the formal sense, as in doing actual formal dancing. I also bloomin' love painting and singing, although I'm not particularly good at either. It's such a powerful thing, an artistic outlet, whether you're good at it or not. And yet men in particular are discouraged from indulging it. We see it as... I think Karen has reminded me, didn't Boris Johnson... Did he call Keir Starmer a girly swat? And that's what you're talking about. I think he did. Anyway, your stories. So for ladies, it's divorce. For men, it's non-masculine pastime. Sandy's in Colchester. Sandy, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, James.
Hello.
It brought back so much of how I felt when I divorced. The freedom that I felt was immense. It was finding my creativity, exactly what you've been talking about.
Oh, you're going double bubble.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Creativity, I've been lucky enough to have had creativity all the way through my career. I'm a designer, but it was finding my, going back to the artistic me of singing. Music was a very, very strong thing with me. It's probably the strongest thing of all with me. And my husband had said right back in the day,
yeah,
if you go into music, if you push yourself to go forward into music, it will be the end of us.
Really? Why do you think he did that?
Possession. I was young. He was older than me by quite a number of years.
Okay.
I didn't realise at the time that was a kind of mind game play, and it was subtle. And I just thought, oh crikey, you know.
He didn't want you to do something that he didn't have control over.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So I let that go. And yeah, when I divorced, the first thing I did when I bought my house in Colchester, I got the local newspaper. On the Friday, and on the Wednesday, I was at the local open mic. I was singing my heart out, and I've never looked back.
That's incredible, isn't it? I mean, that can't have been the only thing. So, I mean, that's the perfect example of what being freed by your divorce did. But you had... And I'm always a bit uncomfortable asking these questions, because...
Don't be uncomfortable, I can take anything.
Thank you. So you had sort of suppressed your real self in order to keep your husband sweet.
Yes, I had, yeah. It was all about him, yeah. It was all about status, it was all about owning things, it was all about showing things to other people, it was all about... You know, I've got to a certain level in my life. You know, we had a lovely house, we had horses, we had loads of things.
You've now gone into the last topic as well. This is an extraordinary call. Is it? You're ticking off my topics like a shopping list. Incredible.
That's why I called you, because I've got a little bit of everything in there.
You certainly have.
And now I'm in a two-bed terrace, and I'm with a man who I absolutely know absolutely loves my bones and I love his. And we just live a very comfortable in and small life, if you like.
So with your ex, it would be he loved what he thought you either A, said about him, or B, what he could turn you into.
Yeah, he just said, I thought because I was happy, you were happy.
Okay. Ah. And that's the situation he'd created. That's the environment he'd created where your happiness was completely irrelevant. He genuinely believed.
Totally. He never asked me how I was ever in 23 years.
Whoa. No. He genuinely believed if he was happy, you were happy.
Yeah. He said to me, don't hug me. He said, I can't take the feeling crowded.
Well, better late than never, eh?
Absolutely.
And you are literally the I mean, you could have been quoted in this story, like Pat describing rebirth, a true self post-divorce, much happier. And you sound it. I mean, I didn't speak to you during those 23 years, but you sound light. There's a lightness to your voice on the radio that's actually lovely to listen to. Emma has, as is her wont, dug into the detail here and the research. And I mean, many studies show that men benefit most from marriage, longer lives, better health outcomes, while women actually thrive as singletons. That's not Sandy, because she's now in a new relationship, but she cites research from both Harvard and Psychology Today suggesting that cumulative stress impact is more likely to make a woman feel smaller and more inconsequential to the success of family harmony. And again, I hope it's getting better as the generations progress, but it's got echoes of boys and girls at school, hasn't it? Don't single-sex schools perform better for girls than they do for boys? Girls do better at single-sex schools than they do at co-ed schools, whereas boys, I think, benefit from being at co-educational schools. And you can see why. Speaking as the product of an entirely boy-based education from the ages of 7 to 18, I could probably be the poster boy for all the damage that can do to you. But remember, we want men as well, men who have discovered what Jackie just described as a consequence of doing things that other men might mock or that society might be judgmental about. Most obviously, Samaritans say today, singing, painting and dancing. More of that after the very latest news headlines with Dominic Ellis.
MPs and members of the House of Lords have been warned by MI5 they face a significant risk of espionage from the Chinese state. The Commons Speaker, Sir Lindsay Hoyle, has circulated a new espionage alert issued by the security services. The security minister is expected to address the Commons shortly. Reform UK's Nigel Farage says his party would rhetorically agree with the Home Secretary's plans to overhaul the asylum system. Shabana Mahmood's under pressure from some Labour MPs who are threatening to block the plans unless she U-turns. And the Conservative leader has promised to reinstate the two-child benefit cap if it's scrapped by Labour in the budget. Kemi Badenoch says removing the limit would add £3.5 billion to the welfare bill. LBC weather, a cold but dry afternoon for many. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest with a high today of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
We had our smart meter installed a year ago, and it's made things so much easier. Not having to submit meter readings or having to deal with estimated bills is great.
A smart meter sends meter readings direct to your energy supplier. It means you get accurate bills, not estimated bills, and you don't even need an internet connection. Call your energy supplier to request a smart meter today.
Real testimonials voiced by actors. Eligibility may vary.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
12:33 is the time. It's no point doing any of this if I can't plug the podcast. This is nice from Steve. I really recommend Mr. Burton on the iPlayer. It brilliantly shows what you're talking about, James. Richard Burton struggling with his massive talent and his very, very masculine mining village background. You're right. It also features Toby Jones, who was the guest on... Was he on last week's Full Disclosure? I think he was. Has Toby Jones been... Have we done the Toby Jones Full Disclosure yet? It was last week. And I've got one coming up, featuring Stephen Mangan. We haven't done the Stephen Mangan one yet, have we? Or have we? Someone should pay attention to this stuff. Probably the bloke who presents both the radio programme and the podcast. But Stephen Mangan is in Billy Elliot, which is another film really about the tension between culture and masculinity, or masculine environments and certain types of culture. So there you go, Toby Jones and Stephen Mangan, either imminent or recently on Full Disclosure, both popping up in this conversation. It's a great recommendation as well, Steve. It's a beautiful, beautiful film. This got me as well. James, I'm 6 foot two, ex-squaddy, 200 pounds, shaved head. I sew my wife a handbag or something similar every birthday. On our 30th anniversary, I enamelled a brooch for her. I'd rather do things like that for a living than work in construction, but I can't afford it. I envy my 6 foot son, who is a 20-year-old semi-professional drag queen, dancing and joking on stage off Canal Street. That's up in Manchester. I'd have gone all Jake the Poacher. That's a brilliant Withnall and I reference, prancing like a bleep. I don't even know if that's a bleep, but Ofcom are very strange, and it's not a word I'm going to say on the radio. If you're familiar with Withnall and I and the character of Jake the Poacher, then you'll know what I just bleeped. When I was younger, hopefully I'll grow out of all this further before I die. But doing the art and the handbags, why, are beautiful, and it sounds like you're getting something out of it that you're not going to get anywhere else. Lots of messages coming in, and I do usually prioritise callers, so I'll just do a couple more. This is really poignant. I'm now retired, and I thought I'd have all the time to myself to do what I always wanted to do. However, I'm trapped with the housework and looking after a dog that I never wanted. I envy my friends who are single. I'd love to get my freedom back before I leave this world. I'm convinced that women are better off without the stress of being in a relationship. I was toying with the idea of leaving the last line off that text and asking you if you thought it was from a man or a woman, because it was obviously from a woman, wasn't it? And it is obviously speaking to precisely the phenomenon that this story today addresses. And the men thing is the thing that other men might pretend. That's it, because no one really goes, what's that all you're singing? Oh, you big girl's blouse. That's projection. It's another thing from therapy. If I point a finger at you, there are three fingers pointing back at me. So you tell me that you're singing in a choir. I call you a big girl's blouse. I'm worried about my own masculinity. You tell me that you're singing in a choir. I say, that's incredible. Oh, I'd love to do that. I'm not worried about my own masculinity. I promise you there's something in that. It's not going to be true of every single example. But generally speaking, you tell someone you're doing crochet or dancing or singing or painting, and one of your male mates, and you know which one it would be, one of your male mates goes, oh, you big girl's blouse. He's worried about his own masculinity for whatever reason. At least that's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. David is in Palmer's Green. David, what made you pick up the phone?
Yeah, I mean, just this thing about men doing things that are not necessarily masculine. So, yeah, so I do... my goddaughter would laugh at this, because I do Zumba, and every time I tell her I'm going to a class, she has a right old chuckle.
Zumba.
But it's like going to... It's like going to a party every class, and it keeps me healthy and stuff. And I also do a bit of sewing and tailoring. I used to be into this stuff a long time ago, and then I kind of stopped it when I started working in a bit of a corporate environment. And then sort of when I left that environment, it was like, right, I'm just going to do things which make me happy, irrespective. And I tell everybody, what I do now. I used to do the bit of dancing stopped it because of rugby, because I did an anterior cruciate ligament.
Oh, okay. So not because the rugby team were ribbing you, but because you'd actually knackered your leg.
No, not at all. No, not at all. It was nothing like that. But, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, later in life, I'm sort of 61. And I kind of, you know, just thought, you know what? It doesn't really matter. You know, I'm just going to go out, do things that I enjoy.
Yes.
And going to the class is just, you know, it really is. The environment is fantastic. Get a little bit of, you know, sort of, you do that, you know. There's another thing that I do is a thing called Kangoo. Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, right. You'll have to look it up, James. It's like, you got these boots which are a bit like ice skating the actual top of the boot, but then underneath there's like a rubber sort of spring thing, and you kind of bounce around to me.
And you're getting something out of that that you wouldn't get from going to the gym. It's doing something different from other forms of exercise.
Yeah, well, that's the reason why I did it, because I started going to the gym thinking, right, I'm getting to an age where I need to keep the bones moving and everything.
And I
hated it. I hated doing the weight. So it's absolutely boring, and luckily, the gym I went to at the time had these classes on. So I thought, do you know what? I'm going to try one of them. And I went in there, and at first, you could see everybody looking around because it's predominantly, there was one or two males, but the majority female. But then after the second lesson, it was just the norm. You know, because I went, you know, kind of...
Mate, I don't take this the wrong way. I don't see how you possibly could. But you sound, even in this conversation, you are supremely comfortable in your own skin.
Oh, yeah.
You just are. No, no. I mean, so what you would get is with somebody who would...
I've always been, though.
I think I was going to say, I bet you always have, because somebody who would come at you now and say, oh yeah, have you got a leotard, have you? Or do you wear leggings? Or so, and some of it might be funny. It would, but someone whose banter had a bit of an edge to it, that would be the man who wasn't comfortable in his own skin. That would be the man who would be far too embarrassed to do what you've done. But it didn't cross your mind to be embarrassed, as far as I can tell.
James, it keeps me healthier, and I feel a lot healthier than a lot of my peers.
And you're very supple as well, aren't you?
I bet you can. Depends on what range you're using.
You can bite your own toenails, I heard. David, take care. I love it. And why wouldn't you want to be more like David, as opposed to the bloke going, oh, flipping out, he goes to Zumba. You know I'm right. And listen, because I know I sometimes can be a little bit curt and short, but if you are kind of idiot's corner territory and you're listening to this with a slightly wry smile, thinking, oh, Lordy, I know he's right and he means me, you don't have to be like that. Go and do it. Sign up. Go and do the class. Seriously. And you'll probably stop sending bilious texts to radio presenters you've never met. You just find a little bit more warmth and happiness inside yourself by doing something that engenders warmth and happiness, whether it's Zumba or painting or crocheting or enamelling brooches. Nassim says, I can't believe how happy David sounds about the things that he does. That's what this stuff does to you. It releases endorphins. And all exercise releases endorphins, but if you're not bored rigid, you're going to be having a much happier time than you are when you are. Graham is in Holmes Chapel. Graham, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Hi, great to talk to you. So when I was young, I went to a man's man kind of school.
Yes.
And it was a very big rugby playing school.
Right, so you and me both.
I was 6'3", 18 stone. You were regarded as a god.
Yeah, but second row, were you, or a prop?
Yes.
Straight in.
When I was 13, just over.
Yeah.
I lost the eyesight in my right eye in an accident.
Oh, man.
It's a long time ago, but suddenly I couldn't do any contact sports.
Right.
You went from sort of hero to zero at school. So I was off school for quite a long time.
Right.
So when I came back, the teams had changed and all the rest of it as well. Oh. And I couldn't do any contact sport. So I started having private singing lessons. I'd been brought up in a church-going family. I'd always sang.
Yes.
So I had lessons. I took part in a prestigious national competition.
Lovely.
And came second, which, you know, there's people from all over the country.
Yeah.
But no, none of the guys at school knew about it until the headmaster announced it in assembly. And then, yes, you can imagine.
Well, I can and I can't. It could have gone the other way, but I sense
it was the abuse, both, you know, verbal and physical, because suddenly you were...
Little choir boy. How old are you?
What now?
Yeah.
62.
Okay, so you didn't get... It wasn't like little Alan Jones or someone like that. But it would have been. If you were 10 years younger, it would have been, wouldn't it?
It would, yes.
So yeah, you knocked it on the head, I bet. Did you, to avoid...
So, I stopped completely. When I was 30, I was nagged by a little old lady at church to join a choir. And I said, no, that's not for me. And then she turned up with an application for
it.
Well, no, it got better because she arrived with an application form for the Halle in Manchester, the orchestra. And so I said, yes, Emily, I'll do that. Anyway, I didn't do it. So she, a few weeks later, she said, how did he get on? And I said, Emily, I can't lie to you. There's no way I'm going to get into there. So I said, I didn't do anything about it. So she said, I thought you'd say that. So she'd actually filled in the form this time.
Oh, what a lovely lady.
Yeah, and stamped it, and she held on to it as I signed it. And much to my surprise, I got in.
She'd heard you sing in church, had she?
Yes, she had.
Oh, there you go. Okay. That's the missing bit of the jigsaw. She knew.
She's been a chorus master. She was sort of respected all over the country. I ended up singing with them for just short of 30 years.
Wow. And that's top end, isn't it? I mean, you'd have played in some big venues.
Did the proms nine times. Been on 14 recordings. Sung in...
All because of Emily.
Switzerland, and all because of that love.
So what got knocked out of you at school got revivified, got resurrected by Emily. Yeah. And just in a briefly, because of the timing, only, because I could listen to you all day. But briefly, what difference does it make to you?
Oh, it's my escape.
Yeah.
I don't sing with them any longer. Sure. I sing with a local choir. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Just singing, I would sing anywhere. Yeah.
It's such a cruelty to have robbed you of that at a young age, isn't it, in many ways? And I know, I bet the lads who were responsible for it don't even remember because the next week they'd have moved on to someone else for wearing glasses or having a Madonna poster on their desk or something like that. But it was taken from you and you got it back.
And it was sort of better the next time round, without doubt.
Oh, what a lovely story, Graham. Thank you. And if that isn't the very essence of social judgment, then what is? You know, that terror. Because in school, everything is a petri dish, isn't it? Everything is magnified. Particularly at the kind of school Graham and I went to. Where I presume he was boarding, but even if he wasn't, the intensity of encounter. And that is social judgment times 10. And it took it away from him for 20 years. But my Lord, what a lovely story of getting it back.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The Home Secretary's diagnosis of our asylum and immigration system is it's a disaster for community relations. Does her cure risk making them worse? Is it racism on steroids?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair
reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that a Scrabble tournament in Coach here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour, same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll! The cafe bar's in Coach G if you fancy a brew, or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time. This is nice. Olive writes, this is such an uplifting hour, just what the doctor ordered. And Dan, on a similar theme, after all the unpleasantness of the political landscape at the moment, this chat on finding art, music, etc. again is wonderful. So joyous to hear people doing something they love. I'm definitely not crying. It's a cold wind, okay, says Dan. And so, because of that, and other messages saying exactly the same thing, I'm not going to revisit the claim or the call. Well, just the insult by Richard Tice of special needs children. I'll get stuck into it tomorrow, but I'm not going to sort of be seduced back into the cesspit that him and his colleagues inhabit when we're in the middle of a little reminder of what life could and should be like if we were all a little bit kinder to each other rather than looking around for people to abuse and coming up with autistic children who wear ear defenders in Richard Tice's case. Anyway, oh, and speaking of that lot, missing word round, Reform Council repaints road markings for school which, blank, blank, blank. Anybody? A few of you got it correct, or close enough, not necessarily the exact words. Reform Council repaints road markings for school which closed in 2016. And remember, on the only perhaps occasion I've ever agreed with Nigel Farage, if you want to know what they'd be like running the country, have a look at how they're running councils. So closed schools up and down the country can look forward to having the school go slow children markings repainted on the roads outside. Back to life changes. For ladies, it's divorce. For men, it's art or creativity. It's things that... And, of course, the misogyny that underpins it is real, because the things that these men are most frightened of are the things that they think are female pastimes, feminine pastimes. And if you're really frightened of doing something that is perceived as a feminine pastime, it's probably because you've got a problem with women, which is, of course, what misogyny is. Sorry to put a slightly darker shadow over proceedings, but there's a reason why the social judgment is there, and it's important to recognise it and remind ourselves. Sammy is in Leeds. Sammy, what made you pick up the phone?
Made me pick up the phone because in some way, I thank my ex-husband for divorcing me. It's like I have a new lease of life. I've been able to breathe, find myself in spaces that I was existing. I was not living in that marriage, and being in a place where I have now three daughters who are teenagers and young women, it just feels like that was the best move for us. At that time, of course, it felt as though my world had come crashing down. I couldn't think for myself. I always used to cook according to his choices of menu. Wow. There was no choice there. But now there's so many different cuisines. There's change of colour, there's, you know, appreciation of music and different ways of creativity. And my children are, you know, when I see them thrive, I just feel as though, in a way, I am grateful that this step did take place. And it's like, I feel I'm free, and going forward, my children have that choice to choose.
Which you didn't realise you'd almost had it taken away. Can you remember any moments? Can you remember, like, when you began to emerge from the heartbreak and the sadness and actually started thinking, hang on a minute, that wasn't normal. This is better.
Yeah, it was close to when I nearly had a mental breakdown.
Yes.
Because I was severely pregnant. This individual had just walked out on me. There was a condition: either keep the marriage or keep the pregnancy. And I was like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, I cannot do it. And because of that cultural sort of pressure from him, not from society, from him, where all of a sudden he grew this religious sort of conscious that there was this pressure on me to have a boy. And the ultimatum of that was either terminate the pregnancy or save your marriage. And for me, it was so, because I had no outside sort of support,
right.
I was just in this space where he was the one who was just telling me everything how to do, and I didn't have an opinion, I didn't know what to do, but something inside me did not sit well, where I was expected to just go, have a termination, come back and just get on with the cooking and the cleaning and get on with my part-time job and just be...
So he broke it. He'd got you conditioned, brainwashed, gaslit, whatever you want to call it, but there was...
Yeah.
There was a straw that could break. There was one thing, one push too far that you could not resist pushing back against.
Because, and I think that came from my teenage years, where I'd stood up to my father in the past against domestic violence,
right.
You know, against my mother. And I just felt like, well, I think that person was still alive somewhere. But because this person had put me, I was seeing it from a mother's perspective, not a wife's perspective.
Wow.
Because he was saying to me to get rid. And I just thought, how will I live with myself, regardless of... So, say, for example, if I did go with the termination, that would mean getting pregnant again, trying for another baby, get the scan, it's not a boy, same cycle. And I thought, do I really, and I guess I just thought, do I really want this?
To do that.
Like, and I wasn't thinking straight. And
you're worthless in that. You're worthless in that equation. You're just a womb on legs.
Exactly. And when he walked out, I just thought, I don't know what to do. But then the locks got changed because it was his house. I had to leave that property. It was hard.
Oh,
but now when I look back on it, I just think to myself, do you know what? I am now living life on my terms. I'm embracing my culture, my religion on my terms. There's no sort of, you know, I have an opinion. My daughters have an opinion. They are their own individual ladies. And there is no right or wrong. Whatever it is, we'll figure it out. And, start what outsiders think of how we dress, what we say. We do have an opinion. It is valid. We do matter. And if you've got an issue with anything that we have to, that's a you issue, not an us issue.
Whoa! That's just magical. Good for you. Well, no, what a terrible thing was that? That makes me sound like I'm sort of patting you on the head and saying, well done, like a low-level entry letter. But I'm not. I'm just a bit... I'm a bit lost for words, because I don't think either of us were expecting quite all of that to come pouring out, were we?
No, but I think sometimes things need to be said. You just need to be transparent and say,
that's
okay,
so
it happened.
Right.
I'm not living in the past. I'm living my life. I'm getting and embracing it, and I'm celebrating life.
And it's shining out of every syllable you're saying. Where would you be now if you'd stayed? What would your life be now if you'd stayed?
If I'd stayed right now, it would have been, oh my goodness me, I can guarantee you I would have had a... he would have had a second wife. I would be expected to co-live with her. I would have been not have a voice, just be quiet, just cook and clean. Don't answer back. Don't say he could. I think because I've always been the why child growing up as well. I've always been curious to know why are certain things the way that they are, and I just want to learn. And if it doesn't sit well with me, the answer does not sit well with me, I'm going the other way, and you can go that way. And that we can agree to disagree, but individuals like him, he would have just posed his ideology onto me, and I would have to accept it. And my children, that cycle would have continued, where my daughters would have felt trapped and suffocated, and that would have been a bigger tragedy.
You're fantastic. And I don't know that we'll ever know for sure or be able to count them, but you would have just inspired some people listening to this, Sammy.
Well, that's what it is. Share your stories. Be out there. Celebrate. Don't be afraid to call out these behaviours and let them... Not even in Islam this is acceptable. A lot of people seem to think that it is. Well, it is not. It's cultural divide, narrow-mindedness, ignorance. And if you the status of a woman in Islam is quite high. Sure. But unfortunately, some of these narrow-minded individuals just seem to think that you need to be covered up. You need to be like you're a piece, you're an object, you're a property. No, you're not. You are a human being who has feelings, who has thoughts. So do have your own life. You don't need to be living in a man's shadow to tell you your worth.
And you don't need to be a Muslim to feel that you are living in a man's shadow. But
exactly.
No, well, like the other women who've rung in this hour, who are from different backgrounds, but many of your experiences would intersect almost perfectly. I'm so glad we did this today. We nearly didn't. But if there'd been any doubts at all at 5 minutes to one about whether or not it was the right thing to do, you would have just smashed them to smithereens, Sammy. But there weren't, because all the calls have been extraordinary and a real privilege to sit here and host things. Just one little correction. It was David Cameron who Boris Johnson called a girly swat. So I stand completely by my observation that men who are actually uncomfortable or frightened or fragile with regards to their own masculinity are precisely the ones that would try to use femininity as an insult when dealing with other men. They're also often very, very promiscuous, such men, because they've got something to prove to themselves. How lovely to talk to men who've got nothing to prove to themselves and to women who have proved extraordinary things to themselves and the people around them. If you missed any of it, I do urge you to listen back on Global Player or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, and pause and rewind live radio, because some days you might just want to check your ears and be sure that what you think you just heard actually happened. The podcasts are there as well, including James O'Brien Daily, Best Bits of This Show, and Full Disclosure, featuring... Is it Toby Jones this week? Has anyone checked? It's Toby Jones. Toby Jones. Toby Jones. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Wasn't she fantastic?
Oh, she was lovely.
Fantastic. Thanks, James. At 3 today, the 2022 fuel prices might feel like a long way away, or ago even, but they'll live long in our memory, won't they? But is it really over in your house when it comes to fuel bills? At 2, the Home Secretary took on all comers in the Commons yesterday.
Unfortunately, I am the one that is regularly called a and told to go back home.
Is she reform light, or is she the kind of full-fat Labour leadership that's lacking in Keir Starmer? But straight up after the news, I want to talk about her diagnosis that our broken immigration system is tearing the country apart and the cure that she thinks is the right cure. Is it tearing our country apart, and has she come up with a cure? That's all coming up next after the news here on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, MPs are being warned that Chinese security services are trying to recruit them to spy on the UK using LinkedIn. The alert sent out by the Speaker of the House of Commons names two headhunters working on behalf of Beijing. The Security Minister David Jarvis has been updating Parliament this afternoon.
Let me speak plainly. This activity involves a covert and calculated attempt by a foreign power to interfere with our sovereign affairs in favour of its own interests. And this government will not tolerate it.
Economists, parliamentary staff and people working for think tanks have also been targeted. The Community Secretary has defended the government's plans to overhaul the asylum system. The government has been forced to backtrack on policies in recent months after objections from backbenchers. The plans have been described as cruel and dystopian by some Labour MPs. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has accused the Chancellor of planning to set out a smokescreen to cover up tax rises. It's reported Rachel Reeves will freeze tax thresholds until 2030 when she outlines her plans next week. When inflation and wage growth is taken into account, a freeze could mean more people paying a higher rate of tax. Speaking at a press conference, Ms. Badenoch accused Labour considering the move to pay for weakness on welfare.
And if it wasn't already clear,
that Labour are the party of welfare, not the party of working people, it is clear now. Because these changes they are making are not fair, they are not right, and we will oppose them every single step of the way.
Children are going to be asked to prove their age before they chat to other users on Roblox. The online gaming platform is bringing in mandatory checks to make sure people can only speak to others who are the same age. The tech will also ask for a live video to put players in different age categories. And the number of businesses going bust rose by 17% last month compared to the same time a year ago. Experts are warning bankruptcies could become more common as firms grapple with rising costs and economic uncertainty. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 136 points at 95.38. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, a cold but dry afternoon for many. Outbreaks of rain in northwestern and southeastern areas, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Oh. So, off to my mum's first.
Yeah.
Then your nan's.
Yeah.
Then my cousin's.
Yes.
Then Uncle Paul's.
Yeah.
Then your second cousin twice removed from your dad's second marriage.
I mean, they did send us that card. Wait, who's my second cousin?
Škoda's got you covered this Christmas. With great offers and delivery before the big day on stock vehicles, you can do it all in a new Škoda. Find yours at škoda.co.uk. T's and C's apply. Ask your retailer for offers.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. I want to pick up in a sense where we left off yesterday and continue to talk about what Shabana Mahmood announced in the Commons. It was after I'd finished speaking with you about it for a couple of hours yesterday. So we have a great deal more meat on the bone, don't we, to discuss. I must say I was quite surprised at how quickly the debate in the Commons and the responses in the Commons and since became almost entirely about racism and that line that she said at the weekend of our immigration policy, our broken asylum system tearing the country apart. There was a lot of pushback in the Commons and elsewhere on that statement yesterday, but the Community Secretary, Steve Reid, was in support, not surprisingly, in support of Shabana Mahmood and said it is causing resentment and fear on race lines and on xenophobic lines, essentially, because there is so much doubt about the effectiveness of the immigration system. The Home Secretary pushed back very hard, didn't she, on a number of points that were to do with race and to do with community tensions. If you missed it, here's a taste of what happened in the Commons yesterday.
I have no doubt about who we really are in this country. We are open, tolerant and generous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the public rightly expect that we can determine who enters this country and who must leave. It starts by accepting an uncomfortable truth. While asylum claims fall across Europe, they are rising here. And that is because of the comparative generosity of our asylum offer when compared to so many of our European neighbours. So we must now build an asylum system for the world as it is, one that restores order and control.
Britain has a long and proud history of responding with compassion to people fleeing unimaginable horrors. That should continue in a way that is fair and sustainable. So we welcome some of what the Home Secretary have said on that score. But what is not helpful is the Home Secretary claiming that the country is being torn apart by immigration. Acknowledging the challenges facing our nation is one thing, but stoking division by using immoderate language is quite another.
I have to say to the Honourable Gentleman, I wish I had the privilege of walking around this country and not seeing the division that the issue of migration and asylum system is creating across this country. Unlike him, unfortunately, I am the one that is regularly called a and told to go back home. It is I who know through my personal experience and that of my constituents just how divisive the issue of asylum has become in our country. And I do say to him, I wish it were possible to say that there isn't a problem here, that there's nothing to see and that it is all, in fact, just extremist right-wing talking points. But this system is broken and it is incumbent on all members of Parliament to acknowledge how badly broken the system is.
Attempting to out-reform reform is actually just boosting
this baseless far-right narrative and will only deepen divisions when we urgently need leadership and hope instead.
Let me tell her, I couldn't care less what any other political party has to say about these matters. I don't care what other politicians are saying on the television. I don't care what other activists are saying either. I care about the fact that I have an important job to do, and I can see that there is a problem here that needs to be fixed. If it was possible to pretend there wasn't a problem because there wasn't one, I wouldn't be saying there is one. There is a genuine problem in this asylum system, and we need someone to sort it out, not to pretend it doesn't exist, which I'm afraid is one of the things that fuels the division in the first place. My own constituents, since I have been Home Secretary, have been telling me directly of abuses in the visa system that they can see with the evidence of their own eyes long before any officials in Whitehall have ever clocked onto those things. It is a moral responsibility when you see something broken to fix it and to make sure that the fact that it's broken is not fueling division in our country. And let me also say to her, it is Green Party politicians who are absolute hypocrites because they talk great language in here and then oppose asylum accommodation in their own constituencies.
Well, what you can't see because you're listening to it on the radio is that Carla Denyer, the Green MP that the Home Secretary was directing those last remarks to, went absolutely ballistic in response to them, sort of physically ballistic, if you see what I mean. Speaking with LBC's political editor Natasha Clark last night after that mammoth Commons appearance, the Home Secretary explained why she chose particularly strong language in some cases.
It's horrible to be subject to racism. It's not new. There's a bit more of it around these days than there used to be, unfortunately. But what I'm reflecting is not just my personal experience, it's that of my family and many of my constituents.